Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And if you hear a little noise behind me, that's because we are live from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, Nevada. 165,000 nerdy nerds here to see all the latest gadgets. And I've been here since Wednesday, and we've been having a great time covering it for you on my podcast network and on the radio show. And I'm glad you're here. We won't be taking calls today. We're just going to be talking to people about what's new, what's coming, what's at CES. Sunday's a good day to come to CES. I had a thought, you know, if you CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, is open only to accredited press. There are about 5,000 of us here out of 165,000. The rest are mostly dealers and manufacturers. So dealers come here to meet manufacturers and decide what they're going to carry in their stores this fall for the holidays. Or sooner. Most of the stuff, though, won't be available till much later this year that you see at CES. And I know a lot of you would like to go, but you can't just walk in the door at CES. You can't buy a pass. In fact, I don't think you can. I don't think they pay for passes. I think you just come. Do you? Do you pay for passes? Scott Wilkinson is here. We should introduce him now because he's going to help me out. Scott is our home theater expert, usually on this hour. We're going to spend a whole hour with him talking about the home theater stuff at CES, because CES is big for home theater stuff.
Ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Ton of stuff.
But I'm just thinking, if you arrived at the air... Okay, here's what you do. You fly into Las Vegas on a Sunday morning. You watch for people leaving that look like geeks. And you say, can I have your badge? They give you your badge. You take a cab over to the Las Vegas Convention Center. You come in. This is the best time of the whole show. First of all, it's about one-tenth the people. Most of the people have already gone home, so
right.
It's very quiet. I walked the last hour and a half. I've been walking around the show floor and saw things I hadn't seen before because there were no crowds.
That's right. That's right.
But it's also fun because by this point, the people at the booths who are doing the demonstrations and the talking are completely burned out. And so their guard is down. So you can often get them to say things and tell you things that they really didn't want to tell you 3 days ago.
The other thing I heard was that this year they're experimenting with letting some members of the public in on Sunday, making Sunday.
Oh, I hope they do that. They did it once before in Chicago at McCormick Place,
right?
And it was a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, this time they're doing it. I've heard. I haven't been able to confirm this, but there's an enthusiast group with the CEA is sponsoring. The CEA, the Consumer Electronics Association, which puts on the show, has this membership of enthusiasts. And from what I've heard, they are able to get in today, Sunday.
Oh, that's great.
To see the show. So I do hope that they continue that, because I personally think... Now, having consumers come in the first 3 days would be a problem, because as you said...
It's bad enough
the
without...
The aisles were so jam-packed.
Yeah.
As we saw in our Home Theater Geeks podcast, which we recorded on Friday, and we were roaming around with a live...
We couldn't get anywhere.
It was really hard.
Yeah.
So that would be difficult. But I think Sunday... Because it's so empty, letting some consumers in to see what's going on, I think, is a good thing.
What are the big TV stories? Last year, it was 3D TV. Is 3D TV still alive?
Oh, huge.
Oh, shoot. No, I'm just kidding.
Now, yes, 3D is still alive and well. And really, the story there is evolutionary rather than revolutionary. Although there are some revolutionary things that you and I both saw. For example, we're now starting to see passive 3D TVs using passive glasses of the kind that you get when you go to the theater.
So in the home up to now, when you buy a 3D TV, you get a fairly expensive set of glasses. You might only get one or two. If you want more, they're about $100-$150 more.
That's right. And
they require charging because there's a battery in there.
Or a battery,
And they're heavy and they're ungainly.
Yep.
And that's what you've been able to buy. They do, on the plus side, provide a pretty good 3D picture.
Yes, generally so. Now, some people complain of headaches. Some people complain of what's called flickering, which, because the glasses are alternately left and right, opening and closing, some people can see that as a flickering effect.
Right.
I don't really, but I know a lot of people who do.
It is dimmer because you're only seeing half the screen at a time, and there's this period of time when the screen is completely blank.
Completely blank. Yes, they're doing what's called black frame insertion, and in some cases, both lenses of the glasses are closed for a very short period of time between when one or the other is open. So you're losing about 75% of the light coming off the screen by the time it reaches your eyes. Now the passive glasses are simply polarized, and they're very lightweight. They don't require any electronics.
They're a lot cheaper.
A lot cheaper. People are talking about $20 a pair. I think even that's pretty high for that.
Do the movie theaters pay for this?
They're paying like $5.
You know, there's a company here called Marchand that is selling designer 3D glasses. You could use those, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Vizio was showing a huge line of designer glasses. I think LG was, too. The companies that are showing passive 3D here are Vizio, LG, and I believe Toshiba.
I am not, as you know, we've talked about it before, not a 3D TV fan. I don't really think it's, I think it's a gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, most of my objection has to do with these glasses.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a big step forward. What about glasses-free 3D? Is that possible?
It is possible, certainly.
Yeah, both of us will clear our throat. I have to apologize for my vocal quality today.
Yeah,
it's hard, and it's not because I've been shouting or anything. It's just that it's very dry here, and for some reason you're going to get Vegas throat by the end of a few days here.
Well, plus the fact that you're trying to talk over the noise.
All the time. You are
all
talking.
All the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go to dinner, and it's a very loud restaurant and so on. Anyway. Glasses-free 3D is being shown here. We've seen it, you know, for the last few years, but it's not been a product. And in many cases, such as Sony, they're showing an OLED screen that's glasses-free.
Right.
Toshiba's showing a much bigger one, 55-inch, I believe, that they're claiming they're going to sell this year. But the problem with it for me is your head has to be in a very specific location in order to see that 3D effect.
In fact, we went around and we went to the Toshiba booth and the Sony booth, and you have to stand and they put
little black
markers.
Footprints on the floor.
You have to stand right there. Heaven help the person who leans or tilts his head, and that's just a non-starter.
Even by a few inches, the thing gets all wavy. The whole 3D effect just falls apart. So
now, what about the Nintendo 3DS? This is a gaming device. In fact, we saw it also here. You don't need glasses for that.
Correct. And the reason is that this particular way of displaying 3D, which is technically called auto-stereoscopic, works very well on small screens because you can easily just put them with your hands wherever they need to be in order to see the 3D effect. With a large screen TV, you can't do that. You have to move your body to where it needs to be to see the 3D effect.
Right. We're going to have a parade of products from CES coming by for the rest of the day. So stay here for all 3 hours. In fact, coming up in just a little bit, TomTom has a GPS watch. We're going to see a 3D camcorder.
These are cool.
A number of these, everybody, in fact, is making them, but our camcorder experts, particularly Alex Lindsay, he's a good friend of mine, judges the JVC TV1 is the best. So we're going to take a look at that one.
Great.
Yeah. I guess if you're going to make 3D TVs, if you're going to own a 3D TV, you've got to make 3D videos for yourself.
Well, and this is what a lot of the companies are saying this year, is they're making 3D personal. I mean, we know that there isn't very much 3D content out there. That's growing, by the way, though.
Right.
Sensio announced a library of 50-some titles by the end of this year.
Really?
Yeah, that they're licensing. And the studios are cranking it out as fast as they can. But even so, there's not that much. And so the company Sony, JVC, Panasonic certainly, are coming out with these 3D camcorders and still cameras and for consumers and saying, go make your own 3D content. You know what? You know, your kid's birthday in 3D would be great.
I saw a bunch of great-looking TVs with you walking around. Sony, Toshiba, LG, Sharp.
Panasonic.
I have to say, Panasonic, my favorite, at least the best-looking ones, were the very thin bezel ones from Samsung. I thought they really did some beautiful TVs.
Beautiful TVs. They're certainly the thinnest bezel, which is the frame around the actual picture. They're
thin
bezel.
Is in here. Not only the bezel, but the thickness of the TV display itself.
Seriously.
Somebody has a 0.2-inch thick
Yeah, I've forgotten who that is.
Well, a couple of them are close to a quarter inch, so yeah. You know, you'll have your choice. I asked them. They said, "Well, the dealers are demanding it. We presume that means that the customers ask the dealers, then the dealers ask the manufacturers."
Sure, they want something to put on the wall that looks just like a big framed picture.
Yeah. Scott Wilkinson is here. He is the editor in chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, ultimateavmag.com. Our home theater expert. More from the Consumer Electronics Show right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No holographic devices, no. Sorry.
No, sadly
sorry, Vic.
Not. Sadly not. 4 to 8 gigs per hour?
Yeah.
All right, so it is twice.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're here at the Consumer Electronics Show, Las Vegas, Nevada. The last day of CES is always the best day of CES, if you haven't not killed yourself in the first 4 days. It at least is the most relaxed. There are a lot fewer people here. You know, everybody's a little burnt out, a little tired, but at the same time, you can get around. You can look at stuff, and that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Wilkinson is here, our home theater expert, and we've asked Alan Holland to stop by. He is with the Consumer Video Division of JVC. In my opinion, now, it's early days. I haven't been able to test every camera. We have a really great video guy, Alex Lindsay, who confirms my opinion and that this is the best 3D camera out there. JVC's. Is it the TD1, Alan?
It's the GS-TD1.
GS-TD1. Let me take a look at this. It's a little bit wider than a normal camcorder because it has to have two lenses in the front. It actually kind of looks like it's looking at you when you when you aim it at somebody. It looks like two little eyes. And those go into two different sensors.
Yes.
Then they're combined to save on the memory card.
Or the built-in memory.
Yeah. How much is this going to be, and when is it going to be available?
It's going to be available in March of 1999.
And it records to SD card?
To SD card, or it has a built-in...
Move the microphone right in front of your mouth, because we can't really hear you. It's a little noisy here.
It has an SD card, and it also has a built-in 64-gig flash memory built into it.
Oh, good. 64 gigs is quite a bit. How many hours of video is 64 gigs?
It will give me, at the highest quality, 4 hours.
Well, that's quite a bit. Do we save twice as much data when we have two lenses on a camera?
Because of the two sensors, it will be doing, because we're doing full HD, so compared to AVC HD in full HD, it's twice as much.
Twice as much data. Makes sense.
Yeah. Right.
You also have a 3D, and this is kind of cool, a 3D viewfinder. I mean, so when you're looking at your image, you can kind of get a sense of how it's 3D.
Well, what we do is we have a 3.5-inch LCD.
It's big, yeah.
It's 920,000 pixels, so it gives you the 3D effect. It's because, you know, watching on a display, you wear your glasses. But when you're out filming, you want to see what's out there.
Right.
You don't want to be wearing glasses while you're filming.
You can't wear 3D glasses while you're filming. Yeah. If I take this home, put it on my 3D TV, will it play back? I mean, aren't there different 3D standards for TVs?
There's different standards. Luckily, on this camera, we have all four standards.
So you'd shoot for the TV you're going to put it on.
Most 3D TVs will be able to deal with any of the standards.
Okay.
So you can shoot side by side or over under.
I see. Different positions for the different eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What I found with this camera is you can preference on what you want the output to be.
Yeah.
But you just hook it up. It's HDMI 1.4A. Just plug it in and it'll
just work.
It'll just work.
Right from the camera.
Mm-hmm.
That raises another issue. My chat room, by the way, irc.twit.tv, if you want to join us in the chat room, asked, how do we edit this stuff? You can't use a regular editing program, can you?
Not at this time. Coming packaged with the camera, we'll have a Vario 3D software for editing and archiving.
Okay.
But at the highest quality, we don't have editing at this moment.
Yeah. I mean, the whole world, if we're going to go 3D, mm-hmm. has to change to accommodate. We need 3D cameras. We need 3D editors. How do you even burn it to a disc? You can't.
You'll burn it in the
as
highest
a data,
quality.
As data.
As a data disk on a BD disk.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow. This is amazing.
And then will most Blu-ray players be able to play that?
More Blu-ray players, like more for PCs.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
but I have the lower quality 3D, mm-hmm. which is the 960 coming out, and that can stream right into your Blu-ray recorder.
$2,000 available again?
In March.
In March. U.S. only?
Worldwide.
Worldwide. Available March. The GSTD1 Vario 3D camcorder from JVC. That is great. Alan, thank you for stopping by. Alan Holland is with JVC. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, really cool looking, isn't it?
Really cool.
Yeah, you get around with that, people are going to notice you're shooting 3D.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right.
I am a 3D doubter. I admit it, but I'm slowly getting won over by all this. Are all the best 2D TVs here at CES also 3D TVs?
Yes, and this is one of the things I think we're going to see. 3D is going to become just another feature of the premium TVs. Like smart TV, which is the other big story at the show, all the major manufacturers are adding apps to their TV and app stores. And
yeah, I actually liked LG's app. I'm not a big fan of apps in the TV. I figure you're going to upgrade your TV. You're not going to upgrade. I mean, your TV, you're going to keep for a few years. The apps are going to change. The technology is going to change. Who knows what the big streaming movie site will be 2 years from now. You know, 2 years ago it was Cinema Now. Now it's Netflix. Mm-hmm. Who knows what it'll be in 2 years.
Exactly.
And, well, I guess you could upgrade your TV.
They can push firmware upgrades into the TV.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that the better place to put that, and all the manufacturers are doing that as well, is putting it in the Blu-ray player.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because you will upgrade that in all likelihood.
Yeah, and it's not very expensive.
Right.
I mean, even 3D Blu-ray players now are in the $200 range.
But they all have kind of the same set of capabilities. You've got Netflix on most of them.
Cinema Now still, Hulu. Vudu.
Yeah. Vudu YouTube, is showing streaming 3D.
Streaming 3D in the LG booth. Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah.
I was pretty impressed by that.
So we may actually see 3D coming in over the internet as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is impressive.
Now, I want to say one thing about passive 3D, which you saw and you really liked, and I like too in many respects. However, I have not yet seen a passive 3D TV play 2D material. And I'm a little concerned about what this film on the screen is going to do to 2D.
It might actually degrade it.
It might.
Oh,
there's
dear.
A possibility of that. We won't know till we see one in our lab, which yeah. we will get one, of course. I think we have a Vizio coming in very soon.
Good.
Even though 3D is, you know, the big wow factor, most of what people are going to be watching is going to be 2D for a while.
What about you? I'm going to bring it up again. 4K.
You know,
now, that's what that is twice as high resolution, width twice as high resolution height,
right.
which means it's four times the resolution of HD.
Of HD.
And it looks so real. Although I have to say, some of the HD TVs out there look like they're 4K.
You know,
they're so good looking.
You and I both thought that of the Samsung 75-inch
holy cow.
LED
so
TV.
Vivid.
Beautiful. I thought it was 4K, too, and so did you.
Yeah.
And we found out, no, it's 1920 by 1080.
But Toshiba does actually have 4K displays, but it's for their 3D TV.
Yes, yes.
Which is a little frustrating to me.
Well, that's the other problem, potential problem, with passive 3D, and that's a passive 3D TV that you're talking about, is that in passive 3D, you divide the lines of the picture between the right and the left eye, which means you're getting half the vertical resolution in each eye.
Right.
Now, some people are going to say, oh, well, you know, that's not really high def. And the people who are putting these TVs out are saying, oh, no, your brain puts it together and you really do end up seeing a high def picture.
Right.
In my opinion, I've looked at a lot of passive 3D TVs
here
at the show.
They just don't look that good. I'm sorry.
No, passive 3D.
Oh, passive. Okay.
And I did not see a real strong degradation of image quality.
Okay.
Yes, maybe. And the larger you get, the more of a problem it's going to be, the larger
right.
the screen. And maybe the picture's a slight bit softer,
right.
not quite as crisp as with the active glasses, which give you full HD in each eye.
Right.
So I think that's a bit of a non-starter of an argument against it. But the quality of the 2D picture coming off of a passive 3D TV, that could be of some concern. And we didn't see that at the show because all they were showing was 3D content.
What about audio? I don't want to leave audio out. It's not just TVs here.
No, and there are some really big audio stories here at the show. Primarily, believe it or not, 3D audio. And a lot of people have originally heard that term and said, oh, well, they're just trying to jump on the 3D bandwagon, you know, 3D video, 3D audio, blah, blah, blah. But no, there's really more to it than that.
Yeah.
There's an organization that has just started up, and well, I will tell you about it after the break.
Steve Martin's been tweeting a little bit from the Consumer Electronics Show.
Oh, he's here.
Well, he's not here, I don't think. But let me tell you, we'll talk about it at 33 after the hour. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by our internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazingly low price. Call 866 the number 2 get net to get DSL Extreme. Steve Martin was tweeting earlier this week I don't know. I want to say from the Consumer Electronics Show, but maybe if you hear what he says, you might wonder. He says in his Twitter feed, which is Steve Martin to go, report from Vegas Consumer Electronics Show saw a demonstration of, quote, bow, end quote, modular unit that can direct an arrow into a bale of straw, quote, pad. He says pet, quote, cat that you feed and will, quote, die if you don't, also needs air, kitty litter, gives birth and has feelings. These are some of the products Steve Martin found at CES.
Reading about at CES.
He says electronic wired, quote, voice phone with, quote, touch rotary dial surface, weighs a ton, wow factor, 3D. Found large wooden device that can toss boulders over castle walls. iPad killer. Steve Martin to go on Twitter. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's also on Twitter, at Scott Wilkinson. Is that right?
Actually, HT Geek Scott.
Oh, you've changed it now. It was something else.
It was my college
nickname. Don't even...
I'm not even going to say that.
It'll confuse people. They'll look for it. At HT...
HT Geek,
Geek Scott. Okay, with two T's.
Which, of course, is a handle based on my podcast on the Twit Network, Home Theater Geeks.
You can find that. In fact, we did a Home Theater Geeks a couple days ago.
On Friday, we recorded it. We wended our way through the throngs.
So if you want to see video of all the TV stuff, that's actually a good way to do it.
That's right. That'll be posted on Monday, I think.
Monday, that'll come out at twit.tv/ HTG, or you can find it on iTunes or the Zune store and so forth.
Right, and on my website as well, ultimateavmag.com.
This is the biggest CES ever. Did you know that?
Really?
Yeah, they say 165,000 people, largest CES ever.
It certainly felt a lot
it was more crowded, wasn't it?
Than last year, by a long shot.
And also very vibrant. I got the feeling everybody was excited to be here. Everybody had some great stuff to show.
Oh, yeah.
You wear a pedometer during CES.
I do.
So how many miles did you go last year?
Last year, I topped it at 15 miles.
You walked 15?
I walked 15 miles.
And how many miles have you walked so far?
So far this show, 17 and a half.
You have walked 17 miles in the last 4 days?
Mm-hmm.
Scott, that's incredible. But that gives you an idea. I mean, there's many, many football fields worth of stuff.
Yeah.
We're in South Hall 1. Behind us is South Hall 2. Above us is South Hall 3 and 4. There's Central Hall and North Hall as well. And then...
then there's the Hilton Hotel, the Renaissance Hotel, and the Venetian Hotel, which is down on the Strip.
All of which have suites and conference rooms of their own with more stuff.
Full of stuff.
Which could you say there was one thing that was your favorite thing here? I mean, I know it's hard to... everybody says that. What's your pick for CES? What's the best of CES?
It's really hard to say. I'd have to say, not in the product category, but in the wow factor... probably that video wall room that we saw in the Sharp booth.
That was amazing.
That was incredible.
And you and I were skeptical. We saw it from a distance and said, oh, a video wall. Big deal. But this thing not only was a giant wall, but it was a ceiling and a floor.
And sidewalls.
All of which were live with video.
That's right. And they were using, you know, basically a bunch of Sharp LCD TVs assembled into this video room, I called it. It's basically a cube with one wall missing so you could go up to it. But I got dizzy watching that.
It was very realistic.
It was incredible.
Holy moly. Now, I don't suppose that's a product. I think that's
that was something
to attract you to their booth.
Demonstration, yeah.
The booths are big here, aren't they?
Oh, they're huge.
Do we know who had the biggest booth?
You know, I don't. I would wager that it was either LG, Panasonic, Samsung, or Sony.
Those big TV manufacturers are the ones with the most money.
Yeah.
And those companies, you know, are really not just TV. Samsung had refrigerators.
This is the first CES that they had what are called white goods, which are not white anymore, but they're, you know, refrigerators and laundry, washing machines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The other cool thing that you and I both saw was the Sony head mount display. You remember that?
Are they selling this?
No.
It reminds me of the virtual reality displays we used to wear.
Yeah.
It covers your eyes and has two screens in front of them.
Right, which are little OLEDs, 720p, 1280 by 720p,
yeah,
and little headphones that go on your ears and gives you a totally immersive experience.
Now, KMR in our chat room says, what about 3D audio? We've had 3D audio for years. That's what surround sound is, I guess.
Well, not quite. Surround sound is really 2D audio, and here we're getting the earthquake.
I don't know if that's coming over the air, but we are, for some reason, they decided to position our booth right in front of us, the biggest subwoofer manufacturer.
Earthquake subwoofer.
They claim the loudest subwoofers in the world. I think they're right. So if you hear a booming every once in a while, that's
But
what
yes,
that
I
is.
Did mention 3D audio before.
Well, how is that different from surround?
Well, surround is really 2D because it's in a plane, right? You've got something in front of you, to the side of you, behind you, but it's in this plane. 3D audio is intended to really give you the sense of sound above you, and in some cases even below you.
Wow.
And that's often done with sophisticated processing. The announcement I was going to mention before the break was the formation of the 3D Audio Alliance, which is a group of companies. It's being started by SRS, and we know SRS from True Surround, and they do simulated surround kinds of things out of soundbars and so on. But they are starting this effort to bring a bunch of companies together to create a standard whereby, instead of mixing movie soundtracks and so on to 5.1 or 7.1 or 2, you take all the sound-emitting elements, a car moving, people talking, whatever. You encode their position in 3D space and their movement, where they're moving towards. And then you send...
How do you measure that? Microphones can do that?
Yeah, sure. You
can. I guess as it gets louder, that's closer.
Okay, exactly, right. Yeah. And you get more than one microphone, and you can triangulate on where things are. Anyway, so you specify that, and you send that file to the consumer. And then the consumer's playback system gets that file and says, okay, I have 5.1 speakers, or I have a pair of speakers, or I have an SRS simulated surround. I'm going to render that information in the best way I can in order to recreate where those objects are in 3D space.
This all comes because we've got a lot of computer power.
Correct.
And we can calculate
yes.
some very sophisticated
yes.
positioning stuff.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
So we're not going to see this for a couple of years. They're just barely starting now, and they're going to form a standard probably by the end of the year. It's going to be a free standard. It's going to be open.
Oh, that's good news.
You know, it's not going to be a heavy licensing fee or anything like that. So we're really happy about that. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited by this. This is a serious paradigm shift in the world of audio.
Surround sound really did make a big difference. I mean,
huge.
I think there's no question. It's better.
Yeah.
Unlike 3D TV, where,
where
I at least question whether it's better. And I think 3D audio will make a big difference, too.
I
think if you combine 3D audio with a very high-resolution display and let your brain do the calculations for the 3D, mm-hmm. it will seem more realistic than anything that they can gimmick up.
Particularly a 4K display, like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, when I see really good displays and I hear really good surround audio,
mm-hmm.
I think that's as vivid as you can get.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah, I agree. The only thing more vivid, I suppose, would be like that video room that we were talking about from Sharp.
Isn't it funny, though, that, which I can see eventually, maybe we'd have, you know, 4K displays in every quadrant all
mm-hmm.
around.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny, though, that 3D TV, 3D sound, all of these ideas really have been with us since the 50s. We're just getting better at implementing them.
Exactly.
One thing missing is smell-o-vision. I don't...
You know, at CES, it must have been...
I remember this.
It must have been
a couple of years ago.
More than a couple. Like 5 or 6 years ago, they had a smell-o-vision system. It was hilarious.
It was like a smell organ because it had...
Yeah.
Different
64 vials.
Vials of smells that they could combine.
Exactly. And it was USB. You plugged it into your computer. You could send a signal to another computer, which had this thing connected to USB, and it would emit the smells. Now, Alexander Scriabin, the Russian composer of the 19th century, you worked with Smell-O-Vision, so it's been around for a while.
Scott Wilkinson and I have both been around for a while. We're live from the Consumer Electronics Show. More to come in just a bit. You stay right here. Yeah, it's like Fahrenheit 451, like the Velt.
Yeah.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, Nevada. Imagine, if you will, the biggest party you've ever heard of, 165,000 people, and this is the last day. You get the idea of what it's like. There's a lot of empty beer glasses around. No, not really. But people feel like, I think, that they've been partying for a long time.
Well, every night there's a party.
Yeah, there are a lot of parties. Earth, Wind & Fire played last Friday night
for
Monster Cable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably the biggest party.
It usually is.
Mashable had its awards. That's a website that covers the web, and they chose this time to have their awards. They did it at the Cirque du Soleil Zumanity show at New York. Yeah, and that's was a pretty gala event.
No kidding.
A lot of fun stuff to go to. Too much, frankly, for any one person to cover.
No question. Way too much.
Scott Wilkinson's with me. He's the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine. He's been doing this for years.
This is probably my 16th, 17th year at CES.
Is it really? Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I took a few years off.
And, yeah, you did.
But you know, in fact, those were the kind of the down years at CES, I think.
Yeah.
It was getting a little slower, and it was a little quieter, and a little less exciting.
I met you at CES, as a matter of fact.
That's right, in 2004.
Something
like
that.
That's when we first got together.
That's right. You were walking down the hall. Yeah. I recognized you from Tech TV.
You pulled me over.
I said, hey, Leo Laporte.
And I said, hey, Scott Wilkinson, you're on the air.
Yeah. And I said, you bet.
And it's been great ever since.
It really has.
Hey, we've got some stuff to show you. This is from Spot. If you go to findmespot.com, you can find out more about it. Derek Moore is with us from Spot. Hi, Derek.
How you doing?
Good to see you. What is Spot?
Spot is a brand we launched about 3 years ago. We provide satellite communications for outdoor enthusiasts and remote workers.
Like geocachers, hikers, remote workers. What is that? People, yeah, loggers?
Loggers, people who work in the oil industry.
Okay.
You know, if you find yourself out outside of cell phone service, off the grid, and you need a way to send a message and communicate, Spot provides that technology.
You're smart, because nowadays everybody's, I'd hate to be Magellan or Garmin or TomTom these days, because everybody's got a GPS in their pocket. It's called their cell phone.
Yeah.
We've all got turn-by-turn directions, but you don't always have access to the cell network. You might still have GPS coordinates, but you don't have a map. You don't know where you are. So you solve that problem.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, all of us, at one time or another, wish that we had a way to connect.
Right.
But you find yourself without bars or outside of cell phone coverage.
Which is either in the Mojave Desert or at CES.
in the Venetian.
In the South Hall.
We had this problem in the Venetian Hotel. We had no bars.
I'm lost. Yeah. So how does this work? You've got it looks like a GPS device itself. What is
that?
That's
right. Yeah. So we launched at CES this year. It's a new Spot product. It's called Spot Connect. And Spot Connect is a satellite messenger that actually pairs via Bluetooth through a Spot Connect app to your everyday smartphone, be it Android operating system or iPhone. So essentially, you download the app on your iPhone or your Droid.
The GPS device.
It pairs up, yeah. And okay. So it allows you to send a custom text message from areas outside of cell phone coverage. And all of our messages are location-based, so they include GPS with a link to Google Maps.
So this is for emergencies. This is, say, I'm lost, help me.
Yeah, it's for emergencies. It has an SOS function, but also it provides consumers with a way to send a check okay message back to loved ones, so your friends and family back at home know where you are, and they know that you're safe when you send that message.
This is very commonly used by skiers, hikers, people who do outdoor activities of all kinds. They carry these kinds of devices, both to say I'm okay and in case of emergency. I think this is clever. How much does this cost?
Yeah, Spot Connect retails for $150, and it does have an annual subscription for the satellite service, and that's $100 per year.
So it can send a message up to the satellite as well as receiving a message from the satellite?
It is one way. So it does send either a text message or an email uplink to the to the Globalstar satellite network.
Wow.
And then you can send that to personal contacts around the world. Or in the case of an emergency, it goes to an international emergency response center.
You got to have a little power to send up to a satellite, don't you?
You got to have a little power, but it is a LEO network.
Low Earth orbit, not Leo Laporte, by the way.
That's exactly right. So they're much closer than the geostationary satellite networks that some of the other technologies out there use.
Okay. This is very cool. Where can we find our Spot device?
Yeah, so Spot Connect will be available and start shipping in early February. But for more information right now, you can go to findmespot.com.
Findmespot.com. Derek Moore, thank you for joining us. That is a very important device. That's a cool device. Not everybody needs it, but if you're going out skiing these days, you know, there's an avalanche, you got your Spot device in your pocket there. That's really important to have.
Even if you're taking a family road trip across the desert, a lot of times, of course, you don't have cell phone coverage, so Spot Connect actually links to a national roadside service provider. So there's a lot of different applications.
We have a very good friend who worked at Tech TV, James Kim, who drove off with his family in a snowstorm and a blizzard. They got lost. They went down. They followed a GPS map down a fire road that was closed. They couldn't get out. James went for help and died in the snow.
His
family survived by burning their tires. They lasted a few days, and rescuers, many of us, including Becky Worley, went out to find him. So this is a very serious thing, and this is something that would have saved his life. So I'm glad you've got it now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Spot Connect and our other devices you can find at, major outdoor retailers like REI or Cabela's, Bass Pro, and even Best Buy. So.
I know a lot of people carry them now. I think that's really good.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on the show.
Thank you so much, Derek. Really appreciate it. Thanks. Let's bring in NVIDIA, because NVIDIA is here, too. But there's lots to talk about today at CES.
Boy, no
so what we're
going
to do is a little, I told Derek, you're going to be on a conveyor belt of gadgets. And now the conveyor belt moves. And here comes Nick Stamm. Hey, Nick, it's good to see you again. From NVIDIA Corporation. NVIDIA had some big announcements at CES, most importantly, the Tegra 2.
That's right.
Very exciting. Move that microphone over to your right there, so when you look at me, you're talking into it. There
you
we
got
go.
It. There
Thank
we go.
You, Nick.
We're good.
Tegra 2 is what?
Tegra 2 is a system on a chip, small processor, but very powerful. So it can be used in mobile devices like tablets and the new super phones that we call this category, because they have dual CPU core, and a GPU. And
everybody's going to go, wait a minute, I just bought a new smartphone, already it's obsolete, and
now
it's true.
Super phone.
These are twice as powerful. They've got dual gigahertz processors in them, and a graphics processor unit that gives you really amazing graphics.
That's correct. Of course, it's NVIDIA GeForce graphics, which comes from our heritage for years and years in the desktop and higher-end systems. So it's really a super powerful device, much faster web surfing, the best flash experience you can get in mobile devices today. Gaming, of course, you'll see enhanced gaming capabilities and technologies, so more visual effects. You'll see games that will actually have special code paths for Tegra 2 processors that
this
give you more effects.
Just to characterize this for you folks at home, this was maybe one of the biggest announcements at CES, because it meant that these small devices now can be powerful enough. They could be a computer. In fact, Motorola announced a phone, the Atrix, that actually plugs into a case to become a laptop.
That's right.
Is that what you've got there?
I actually have a Motorola Atrix right
here.
Here,
hand it to me.
Sure,
I want to see this sucker. This is running the Android operating system.
That's right.
And by the way, these will be required for running the new Honeycomb operating system. It is really CPU heavy and GPU heavy, so you'll need that. So these are much more responsive. They just jump around. Yep. But you can dock this into a keyboard.
Yep. They're web top, they call it. It docks in, and the keyboard attaches to the docking station, and it turns into like a full PC on a big screen. It's an amazing experience. I think Motorola will probably be talking to you later today in more detail about that.
Yeah, we're going to see that docking. That's amazing, but Tegra 2 powered.
Yep.
And that's what gives it the snappy response, the feeling that you really got a powerful unit. What
exactly.
is this? Is this the LG?
This is the LG Optimus 2X, Tegra 2 just announced this week also. And both phones will probably be in the market in the next month or two. Okay, and they'll be running the Gingerbread operating system, or at least over-the-air upgraded to Gingerbread.
That's 2.3,
the
latest version.
Yep.
But you could run Honeycomb on these.
Later on, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Right now it's Froyo, because they're still pre-release, but they will get Gingerbread updates over time, either initial at launch or over-the-air.
Yeah, this announcement, this Tegra 2 announcement, got everybody hopping, including your competitors. AMD and Intel both go, whoa.
I mean, ten tablets. So Motorola tablets, LG tablets, Toshiba, Dell, Acer, Asus, Notion Inc. There's a bunch.
Now, I have a Tegra device. That's my Zune HD, and it's a great little device.
Yeah, very snappy.
This is the next generation up.
Next generation of Tegra. That's correct.
It's based on the ARM9
Cortex A9. Dual core, and then a brand new graphics SoC functionality, which is made by NVIDIA. So it's a GeForce graphics called ultra low power GeForce.
Amazing.
It's amazing.
Yep. Everybody's been talking about this, the Zoom tablet from Motorola, which also runs on Tegra 2. A lot of times people pay attention to the device and they forget what's underneath, but the Tegra 2 is real. I'm really pleased to talk about this.
We're so excited. Yeah. This is a really coming out party for Tegra 2, this show.
Nick, it's so good to see you.
Great to see you again, Leo.
Yeah, thanks a lot for bringing these by. Ooh.
You got it.
I don't want to give them up. The LG, it's Optimus.
And Optimus.
X2X.
X2X. And then, of course, the Motorola Atrix.
And there's also a Motorola Droid Bionic, which will be with Verizon.
Bionic. Yep, everybody wants that one, too.
Yep, cool.
Nick Stamm, thanks for stopping by. So how long have you been in NVIDIA?
NVIDIA, almost 6 years now.
That's
since
great.
I left PC Magazine, Ziff Davis, all that stuff.
One of the great editorial guys at PC Magazine. So glad to see you.
Good to see you,
Take
too.
Care.
Take care.
More from CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, coming up in a moment. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, the snap watch. Snap it. Snap.
What is this?
This is the
Oh, you don't have to. It's fine.
Okay. Oh, I might need to.
Oh, do you want that back?
Yeah, please.
If you hold it up, you're going to hold it up to there. Keep it, yeah, just like that. Yeah. Well, hey, 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 Leo Laporte here today from the Consumer Electronics Show. Yes, it's the tech guy and a bunch of other tech guys, like 160,000 other tech guys in Las Vegas, Nevada. Once a year, we all get together and go, what's cool, what's neat, what's different, what's wow, what's... and it's a lot of fun, even though it's pretty exhausting. Scott Wilkinson is here, 17 miles in.
17 and a half.
17 and a half miles in. He's walked a lot in the last 4 days. He's the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, ultimateavmag.com, and the host of the Home Theater Geeks podcast, which we air on our Twit network, twit.tv/HTG. We'll have a good hour and a half from CES on that show.
Posted tomorrow, I think.
Tomorrow, coming out tomorrow. What we didn't cover with you, we've covered 3D TVs, we've covered camcorders, 3D
audio.
Sound, but we haven't covered high-end sound, like stereo sound.
Right.
Which... people still make stereos.
A lot of people. The Venetian Hotel has like 5 floors of two-channel sound.
Wow.
Yeah. Every hotel room filled with high-end two-channel sound.
Oh, so when we're talking two-channel, really we're talking expensive for the audiophile.
Very, very expensive for the audiophile. Well,
give me an example.
Well, one of my favorite demos actually over there was from Sony, and you'd think Sony, mass market, you know, general consumption, but every once in a while, every few years, they try to make a splash with really audiophile quality speakers, and they did it this year. This is not brand new with the show. It's been around for a little while, but these are the SSAR1 speakers, selling in Japan for the equivalent of about $27,000 a pair. And, you know, that... You laugh, my friend. But believe it or not, that is not all that expensive.
That's considered not expensive?
Well, it's expensive, but there are speakers over there in the hundreds of thousands of dollars per pair.
Oh,
so, you know, when you look at those, you go, oh, $27,000 is not
right.
all that bad.
Right.
But, man, they sound good.
Really? You can tell.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Now, they're also using really high-end electronics, Pass Labs, amplifiers, and I had Nelson Pass, the designer of those amps, on my podcast, and EMM CD player and Pass, I think, preamp as well.
Pretty fancy stuff.
Very fancy stuff. Kimber cables. And they played, the one thing I was struck by, they played this group Take Six. Are you familiar with Take Six? Great, great a cappella choir, six guys. And they played this track called I-L-O-V-E-U from their album So Much to Say. And it was astonishing, the clarity of the sound and the definition and the distinction between each sound in this very complex sound field. Because not only do they sing the words, they also do all the percussion by voice. You know, and it was astonishing how beautiful and clear, even mid-range, great bass. It was just phenomenal. Other great sounds I heard over there, Dan D'Agostino, who was also a guest on my podcast very recently, introduced a new power amp, monoblock power amp, something on the order of $20,000 a piece.
Wow.
He started Krell. You remember Krell? Krell Audio is, you know.
You're looking at the wrong guy.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Right. Krell Audio has been around for 30 years, named for the extinct race of beings from Forbidden Planet, the movie.
Yeah.
They had infinite power at their command, so that's how they named Krell. Anyway, Dan founded that 30 years ago, and he's a great amp designer. And he recently started his own company, and that system also sounded beautiful with a pair of Wilson Sasha speakers.
It must be fun to go over there and listen. I mean, dream. It's kind of a dream.
It's a dream
product,
thing.
But it must
absolutely,
be fun to listen to.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes, indeed. So there were a bunch of rooms over there that really sounded great.
In just a minute, we're going to talk about a wristwatch that can tell not only what time it is, but tell you where you are.
I sure need that.
here at CES, you might. But that's coming up in just a moment with the tech guy. But first, I want to remind you, if you haven't backed up today, back up. Every Sunday we do that. Every Sunday, back up. And if you're going to do it right with Carbonite. Actually, if you use Carbonite, you don't have to be reminded to back up. It's automatic backup. And here's the thing I like about it. It automatically backs up to the internet. So wherever you are, if you've lost your laptop, if your hard drive died, if there was a fire or flood or somebody destroyed your computer, you could still get your data logging in on any computer to your Carbonite account. There it is. They even have a free iPhone app and a free BlackBerry app. So your data not only is safe, not only is encrypted and secure, but is available whenever you want it. That's the Carbonite Pledge. I'll tell you, make a New Year's resolution to back up your data. If you haven't lost data yet, you will. I don't have to tell the people who've lost the data. They know. But if you haven't, and you're just, you know, you're living on borrowed time, do yourself a favor. Go to Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo, as the offer code. You'll be able to try it free for 2 weeks. If you decide you like it, I want you to buy it. Using my offer code, Leo, you'll get 2 months free. You know, it's very affordable, $55 a year anyway, for unlimited backup, all the data on your internal hard drive, your personal data. So it's always affordable. 2 free months is an extra special deal. Carbonite.com, offer code Leo. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right with Carbonite. Derek Moore, I'm sorry. That was the last guy.
That was the last guy.
John Forsythe is here. He's Vice President of Special Products for TomTom. TomTom, you know, as a GPS manufacturer. In fact, I love my TomTom GPS. Now you've got a wristwatch. Now, we've seen GPS wristwatches before, but never this small.
Exactly, exactly. So this is TomTom and Nike bringing together their expertise. TomTom is a leader in GPS. Nike is the world leaders in running and sports. And really what we both wanted to do was put together a watch for runners which was not like anything else out there.
So what are the features? How is this different from... First of all, I can tell you, I've worn GPS watches. It's a lot smaller.
It's a lot smaller. It's a lot lighter. It weighs just 66 grams. And it, as you can see, it looks fantastic. So the first thing we're really proud about is the design, the physical design. It's got a
very easy to read. I love the time face. If you tilt it a little bit, for those of you watching at home, you can see a monitor there. You'll see what they're seeing. It's not quite... There we go. There's the numbers. Big, beautiful numbers. Easy to read.
So this is the time display that we're looking at just now. So just in case anybody thinks they've missed appointments, this is on East Coast time here.
I was going to say.
It's late.
Hey, wait a second.
The show's over.
You can see that that's an incredibly clear display.
It is.
And so it's beautiful to look at when it's just on your wrist during regular
It's an LCD wearing. Display, yeah.
It's a really clear LCD display with a mineral glass face there. And it's the simplicity of the design is something that we're really, really proud of with this product. So if I just walk you through the user interface, you'll immediately see, again, compared to other running products that have been out there, this is really, really simple. We've had made a big, big focus on usability. And you can see we've just got four items in the menu, so you don't need a PhD to figure out how to operate your
tilt
watch.
Tilt it forward just a little bit so we can see
there.
It says clock.
You've got clock.
Run.
You've got
battery.
Run. You've got history,
which is
the record of your...
I'm reading this from 10 feet away, so that's how easily you can read it, actually.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. It's very, very clear. And you've got records, which is all your personal bests. And that's not just the personal bests that have been recorded while you've been running with the watch on your wrist. It's all-time personal bests from the Nike Plus online.
So this uploads to Nike's Plus's community?
Exactly. So
how does it do that?
Well, as soon as you've finished your run, if you like, I can run you through a quick demo of the in-run display here. So if I go to the run mode, you can see here. Here what we've got is the sensors that the watch uses. So GPS, it also works with the Nike Plus shoe pod.
Yep.
So that means you can start running even before you get a GPS fix, which is really, really nice.
And it'll start tracking your paces and all, your pace and all that.
So I'm just going to go back in there, and what we're going to do is start a run. So it's linking sensors. It's in demo mode here, so it's pretending to
found a sensor in your shoe, satellite signal indoors.
Yeah. And then we're going to start. So now what you can see is
the reason runners like GPS is it gives you very accurate measurements of how far you've run. It also gives you a track, a map of where you've run, then how long you've run, and it'll record those. How much is this, and when is it available? Where is it available?
It's going to be available on the 1st of April. We haven't disclosed
no price
yet.
TomTom.com for more information. Thank you so much, John Forsythe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More in a moment.
Thanks very much.
Sorry. When that clock goes, it glows. Thank you so much. Good job.
Thank you, John.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are live at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, Nevada. Once a year, I kind of break format. We don't take calls for a weekend. We just take gadgets.
Endless, and there are plenty of
endless
them.
Endless gadgets. Scott Wilkinson is helping me out here. He is our home theater expert, the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine at ultimateavmag.com, columnist at hometheatermag.com. How's that poll going? You were doing a poll on whether those 120 hertz and 240 hertz LCD TVs look better, or are they, what did you call them, the spawn of Satan?
Yes, I said a godsend or devil's spawn.
Yeah, and?
The consensus is devil's spawn.
Do we see a lot of those here? I don't see a lot of people touting it, though. It's really...
Well, it's kind of, it's almost a...
It's a given.
It's a given now, yeah, exactly right. Yeah. And in fact, you have to have that 120 or 240 hertz if you're going to do 3D.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, because you've got to be able to alternate images. Again, we're talking active glasses like we were before, where you have to alternate the right and left images, and you have to do that fast enough. Each eye has to see it. Oh, we're getting this.
Speaking of spawn of Satan, I don't know if you can hear that behind us. It sounds like the devil has invaded the South Hall.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, you have to have 60 hertz, 60 images per second in each eye, which requires at least 120 hertz.
Right.
And then a lot of companies are putting black frames in between the right and left eye, as we were talking about earlier, in order to avoid what's called crosstalk.
So these higher refresh rates and higher resolutions both are kind of needed to give you a decent display if you're only seeing half of what's going on.
Exactly, in the case of 3D.
Right.
In the case of 2D, of course, they do what's called frame interpolation, which is a geeky term for inserting new frames between the actual frames that are coming in and in interpolating or synthesizing where moving objects would be if they were filmed at that higher frame rate, which does make the motion much sharper. You see the distinction, the edges of things much sharper. But it also produces what's called the soap opera effect, which makes movies look like they were shot on video. And it really drives video files nuts. Just nuts. Which is why I said godsend or devil's spawn, because they will call it the devil's spawn. And our audience is primarily, you know, aficionados and enthusiasts.
Right.
And they want to see it as the director intended, as I do. But on the other hand, I want to see sharp motion. I don't want to see blurry motion. And this gets into another very interesting distinction that I've been talking about at the show with a number of people. People say, oh, 140 hertz, 240 hertz. Plasmas are often referred to as 600 hertz, which must be better, right?
Right.
Well, no, because you're comparing apples and oranges there.
Okay.
It's not the frame rate with 600 hertz. It's called the subfield rate. I won't get into the technical part of it, but all I will say is that plasmas have a microsecond response time. So the image on the screen is flashed a bunch of times in a microsecond level, which really means that your eye does not, whereas an LCD, I should say, keeps the image on the screen for a 60th of a second. So that's milliseconds. That's orders of magnitude more, a longer period of time that a static image is on the screen. Your eye blurs that. It's because of how your eye works and how your brain works that causes this blurring on LCDs that you don't get on plasmas.
I'll tell you what would drive you crazy. If you didn't know 3D was the thing and you wandered in here, you'd think you needed a new prescription for your glasses, because every display you look at, because I'm not wearing 3D glasses,
you see the two images,
and it looks like everything's just something wrong with it.
Yeah.
I was just walking through the hall earlier today, and everything is 3D. Everything everywhere. Let me ask you, are TVs any better? I mean, do we see any improvement in quality of television? Let's talk about, you know, the picture. Is the display any better, or have we gotten as good as we're going to get, and they're focusing now on gimmicks like 3D?
No, I think we are getting better. And many people ask me, for example, once Pioneer Kuro, which you have a Kuro, I have a Kuro.
I got it because you said it's, you know, the best, it's, and it was being discontinued, so
I
bought it, and I do love it.
And no one has met that standard again yet.
Oh, thank goodness.
To this day.
Because I spent a lot of money for that TV. I have to say, when I went, you and I looked at those Samsung big LCD TVs, mm-hmm. they looked extraordinarily crisp. Extraordinarily detailed.
But notice also they were playing very slow-moving images.
Right.
You know, and that's what you'll see here. You'll see some movie clips, of course, but when they really want to show a TV off to its best advantage, they'll be either still images or very slow-moving.
Well, that's interesting.
Because, again, LCDs tend to blur things that are going fast. It's not that the LCD is blurring it. It's that your eye is trying to track motion on a series of still images that are on the screen for too long a period of time. And so the image on your retina actually moves and causes that blurring effect that you perceive.
It's a very interesting science, I have to say.
It really
is. There's a lot
of
optics and a lot of very sophisticated physics going on here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how have they improved TVs? We didn't, you know, if there were years where you would see the new technology, SED or OLED, or and we I don't see that anymore.
No, SED has gone away. This was a technology by Canon and Toshiba, I believe. And it was just too expensive to produce. OLED, they're still trying to make it happen.
I saw some OLED displays, but they were all very small. We saw an OLED 3D display.
Yep.
That was Sony's booth, I think we saw that.
Yeah, Sony. Auto stereoscopic, not glasses-less 3D.
But it's so small and it's so expensive.
So expensive, and it doesn't last very long.
Many of us have OLED displays on our phones
now. It works fine for tiny little displays. Well, tiny. I mean, the phones are getting
relatively
bigger, but
tiny.
It's relatively
4-inch displays, that's tiny compared to a 75.
We went to a press conference with LG Display, which is a subsidiary of LG. They actually make the panels, and they also supply them to other companies besides LG for their TVs, also mm-hmm. Vizio and Toshiba, among others. And the question was asked at that press conference, when are we going to see large screen OLEDs? And they said 55 inches by 2012.
Now, 55 by 2012. Well, they better hurry because that's next year.
Exactly. And
the biggest here are 30 inches thereabouts.
Was the Sony. Yeah. I think LG has a 31. Mm-hmm. But realize also that we were talking to a raw panel manufacturer, not a finished goods manufacturer. It's not a TV yet. It's just a panel that then LG or Toshiba or Samsung or somebody will put, not Samsung, Vizio, will put into a TV. So we're not going to actually see that TV if it even realizes by 2012. We won't see that till 2013, 2014 at least.
So there's nothing on the show floor that I should look around and say, oh, this is the next big thing. There's nothing like that.
Again, the TV story here is evolutionary rather than revolutionary, except for some of these concept products that we saw. You know, we're getting more 3D. We are getting more smart apps and internet access and media sharing around your house,
mm-hmm.
and integration between cell phones, tablets, and your big screen TV as well. Vizio's touting their Vizio Internet Apps Plus, Via Plus, which lets you, it's all Android-based.
Right.
And you can start watching on your TV, and then, you've got to go, so you take your Vizio tablet with you or your cell phone, and you can pick up where you left off.
I'll tell you what's really interesting. Normally, this is a TV show, an audio show, mm-hmm. Home theater, that kind of thing, maybe some car stereo. But cell phones, tablets really occupied people's attentions here. This is not normally a show for that.
No, but this is that was probably the primary emphasis of this show,
yeah,
I think.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Let's bring another guest up. We've got more cool products to show you. Scott Wilkinson is here, our home theater expert.
I'm Leo Vivitech, excellent.
The tech guy.
How are you?
Well, let's talk about projectors with Vivitech. That's a very small little projector. Would you call that a Pico projector? It's not quite Pico. It is Pico.
It is part of the...
All right, we'll find out what a Pico projector is in just a moment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott, I want to thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Safe travels home.
Thanks.
You made it just in time for the tease. And we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
All right, sounds great.
Yeah. Gives me a chance to see more about it. You want to stick around for this?
I could be here for that.
Scott should stick around. Viva! Leo Laporte, Viva Las Vegas. We're here in Vegas for CES, the Consumer Electronics Show 2011. 160,000 geeks converging on 18 football fields worth of goods, thousands of vendors,
like 2 million square feet.
2 million square feet. I don't even know what that means. There's booths here that are bigger than mansions. I mean, they're gigantic. Scott Wilkinson's here with me. He's the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, our home theater expert. And it's good you're here because Vivitech is also here. Christopher Yang, who's from Vivitech, is here with a Pico projector.
A new category that's really up and coming.
We've all seen, you know, the PowerPoint projectors. Every office has one. Many schools have one. There's also home theater projectors. We talk about those all the time, Scott.
Right, which Vivitech also makes.
This is a very small projector. How could I describe that? It's like a paperback book, I guess. It's good to have you, Christopher. Yeah. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very
much. And very affordable. This is $500.
This is the Vivitech QMI.
QUMI
Pico pocket projector. Basically, as you can see in relation to my hand and the size of the projector. So it's pretty compact. You can hold it and travel with it and put it in your pocket.
Now, is it for PowerPoint? Is it for movies? Is it for both?
This is for both. This is the multimedia device. Well, all projectors are multimedia, but this is really...
It's got a mini DV HDMI connector on it, so yes. You could connect HDMI.
You can plug in like a game console into it. Right. You can plug in any kind of media player for video.
You could plug your computer into it. You have a dongle there that goes into my my iPad. So there's pretty much nothing you can.
Give a little demo right here.
Should we?
Yeah.
All right, let's do a demo. So
go ahead and plug it in.
It even has a mini SD slot. So if you've got, he's got his iPhone there, but if you've got an SD card from your camera, you can plug it into a slideshow. Right out of that. So put the power in here. This is using a Texas Instruments DLP chip, their newest DLP.
Yeah, their newest HD DLP Pico chip.
And the light source is LED.
Yes, the light source allows you to get about 30,000 hours of life out of it.
You don't have to worry about the bulb anymore, replacing the bulb.
Now,
300 lumens, so you're going to have to darken the room. But we'll do it in here, and it's pretty brightly lit.
Actually, we won't.
For this size of picture, you probably don't need to darken anything.
Yeah. How big a picture can I get on this, Christopher?
You can get a 100-inch image.
100 inches?
Less than 10 feet in a completely dark room and enjoy a nice movie.
So you really could enjoy it. I mean, this would be fun for gaming, for movies.
Yeah.
Look
normally
at that.
I
and
don't
this is coming from his iPhone. He's playing a movie off of his iPhone. I love that.
Look at that. That's incredible. You know, I normally don't cover Pico projectors because they're not really intended for home theater, but this is making me think maybe I'd better start looking at them.
Yeah, no kidding. Vivitech, the QUMI, just for the spec fan out there, 300 lumens, 2500:1 contrast ratio. The native resolution is 1280x800, so you could get full 720p high def on here.
Yep.
It will take 1080i or 1080p in. Pretty nice, and it weighs about 21 ounces, less than a pound. That is amazing.
Look at that. That's incredible.
No, a little more than a pound. I have to do my math right. Pound and a half. But a great picture. Just a really spectacular picture.
Even under all this ambient light.
And we're under a ton of ambient light. Yeah. We turned off a bit of the studio lighting here so we could see it a little better, but still.
That's really nice.
Yeah, this is one of the highest resolution, the brightest pocket projectors on the marketplace right now.
Is it available yet?
No, it's not available just yet. It's going to be available in the April, May timeframe.
And you think the suggested list would be $499, so street price might even be lower, yeah?
Could be.
Yeah.
Could
hey, be. Thanks so much for coming by. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
Christopher
thank you
Yang,
so much.
Vivitech, that's the QMI.
Yes.
K-U-M-I. We didn't even talk about projectors, Scott. That's,
no, we didn't.
Are there a lot of projectors at the show?
There weren't a lot of new ones. We did.
This Pico is a whole new category.
Pico is a whole new category.
We saw it last year. In fact, we even saw it. And I didn't see them again this year. Phones with built-in projectors.
And there are now camcorders with built-in Pico projectors as well.
Wow.
So we saw that. That's the first for this year.
Yeah.
And again, I didn't pay as much attention to that because it's not really the category that I cover. But with this thing now, as I said, I'm starting to think maybe I better start covering it a little bit, especially if you can use it in a home theater type application. But in terms of home theater projectors, we did see there are a lot of them here. And, of course, they're all 3D.
Oh, God. Can we just stop that, please? Stop it. Just stop the madness.
Stop the madness.
I guess you have to do it.
You have to. I think as much as a lot of people, sort of resist, it is an onslaught that is not going to stop.
Yeah, it's not going to go
away.
It's
not going to stop.
Soon.
So JVC has a great... JVC makes great projectors for 2D, and they now are also 3D capable. The Sharp 3D projector actually looked really, really good here at the show. We saw it at Cedia as well, so it's not brand new at the show, but man, it looks good here. Samsung has a new 3D projector. Sony, Panasonic, I think Panasonic. I'm not sure about that, but Sony for sure.
The chat room's asking me, Christopher, if it's like Oprah, does everybody get one? No. There's 1,000 people in the chat room. I don't think
you
we're even as good as great as Vivitech is. I don't think so. Thank you for coming by.
Thank
I really
you very
appreciate
much,
it, Christopher.
Gentlemen.
We're going to slide you out, slide in somebody else on our gadget
on
conveyor
our gadget
belt.
Gadget conveyor belt.
And there are plenty of them. I think we'd never run out if we wanted to do this show all year long. We just one after another of cool gadgets out there.
Oh yeah.
It is high def projection is still around, but it is kind of a specialty item.
It is, and the only projectors in the home theater market, they only have a 2 or 3% of the market share.
Right.
But if you want a really big screen experience, there's only two ways to get it at a reasonable price.
Right.
You could buy the 152-inch Panasonic plasma for.
Give him back his power supply.
He needs to get back his power supply.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, for $500,000,
right?
You know, then you could get that and it'd be lovely. But barring that, you need a front projector,
right,
or you could get a rear projector, which Mitsubishi is here. And they're doing rear projection TVs. They're the only ones left.
The last man standing.
Last man standing. And as a result, they have 100% of the market
share.
Well,
that's true. And are they good?
They're very good. They're extremely good. In fact, they...
It's a good way to inexpensively get a very large display.
Exactly.
I know. We have his power, but it's attached.
Here it is.
There we go. Okay.
We somehow unplugged it.
Get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people come here. A lot of hopefuls come here with a product that they... have invented that mm-hmm. they hope it will go somewhere. They mm-hmm. look for vendors, they look for dealers, look for manufacturers.
Yep.
It's not just the big guys with something that they've already got sold. It's not just the Sonys and the Panasonics.
That's true.
I met Jay Dyer last year at CES. He has a telephone scrambling device for privacy. And this is something, you invented, Jay? Or
No. I'm actually the...
You're repping them.
I'm actually the manufacturer's rep.
And you were here last year looking for a distributor, and you're back again. Have you had any success yet?
Actually, we stopped looking for distributors and dealers because I did some
more testing. It's a tough thing, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not so much that. It's the product wasn't ready for prime time yet.
There you go.
And so I decided I only have one shot at this. So I had them go back and redesign some things to make it so that it was more reliable and a better product.
And your hope would be to find somebody here who would say, I want to manufacture it, or somebody who would say, I want to sell it.
Someone who say I want to sell it. We're actually manufacturing it.
So it's already in manufacture.
Yes.
That's a lot of money. When you invent something, and you can have a great idea. As an example, I have these little Snap-It eyeglass repair kit, just invented by somebody who said, you know, I don't like the eyeglass repair. You know, you have to get a screwdriver, a little tiny screw, and then it's
don't
easy to lose.
It.
This is a screwdriver and screw together that you screw it into your glasses and then snap off the screwdriver so you never have to worry about it. Now, this is something that somebody spent $250,000.
Oh, my God.
They invented it, but then they had to develop it. They had to get packaging. They had to get manufacturing.
Distribution.
Distribution. And then you come here to an event like this, and you say... We want to sell this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to estimate, Jay, or is it, I don't want to pry, but has there been a lot of money sunk into a product like this?
Yes.
Show me what, look, let's give you a plug. I you know, this is a little guy, I want to help him out. This is a phone scrambling device.
Yes.
What's the idea?
This one is for existing phones, if
okay.
you have an existing hardwired phone.
So this is for people who are paranoid about somebody eavesdropping on their phone calls.
Correct.
Well, we all are these days.
It works very, very simply. There is a power adapter that goes with it. You simply plug your telephone headset into here. You unplug it from your phone, plug it in here. Take the cord and plug this in into the actual telephone so it goes in between your headset.
Hold on, Jay. We're going to get more of that in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry,
you got to keep that louder. I can't hear it.
Did you hear that music come up?
No, I didn't, actually.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. From the Consumer Electronics Show. In Las Vegas, Nevada, 2011. We're having such a good time here. We've been showing you a lot of products. We've been talking a lot about home theater with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek from the Ultimate AV Magazine. And I thought it'd be kind of interesting to talk to a hopeful, somebody who comes to CES... looking to make the big score. You've got the Sonys, the Panasonics, but you also have people like Jay Dyer. Jay's with IDS, and I met him last year, and he's got a phone scrambling device that he's looking to find distribution for. The company's in Korea, Jay, right? But you're
yes.
their U.S. representative here.
Correct.
So we started to describe it. The idea is you plug your existing phone in, just the handset, or the whole phone goes into it?
Just the handset. The handset goes right here.
It's a small little device, mm-hmm. and the problem is doesn't somebody on the other end have to have the same device? I mean, how would they understand
yes,
you?
They do. You have to have a pair.
Okay, one on each end. Mom has one, and I have one, mm-hmm. so our calls can be private.
Mm-hmm.
And then how does it do the encryption? How does it do the scrambling?
Well, what it does is it takes the voice and it applies a. Scrambling algorithm to it, and every time you connect, it's a totally different algorithm.
It rotates through them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so it's a totally different algorithm. And once the two units set up a
handshake,
they talk to each other, and no one
in
between.
The voice sounds normal, but to somebody listening in on the line, it's happening. Yeah. Very well done.
Totally unintelligible.
Jay's been listening to that a lot. Yeah. Now, so you got to find a distributor, and then do you have an idea of what that might cost if you find a distributor?
Well, these two units are about the same
price. Oh, so you have one that's a phone.
Yes, this is our phone we've made.
Oh, that's nice. So it's built into a phone as well. I like that, yeah.
With the phone, you just simply decide that you want to have a private conversation. You press the keeper button on each end, and that's it. You have a private conversation.
See, I can see some real applications for this in business as well as in personal security and so forth.
Yeah, the idea was to limit corporate espionage,
right.
To limit for people who are discussing their intellectual property. Artists can use it to discuss their material,
sure.
What they're going to be doing.
I know that you won't set the price. Whoever sells it will. Do you suggest a price to them, or you just say, this is what's going to cost you wholesale? You figure out how much you want to make.
That's pretty much
That's
it.
That's how
Let
it
me
works.
Tell you how much you're going to pay for each unit, and you sell it for whatever.
So how
you
do these
want.
Negotiations go? I mean, how do you find these people? Do you go up to somebody at a booth and say, would you like to sell my scrambling phone?
Well, actually, we've done that with Samsung.
Well, that's a pretty good guy.
Yeah, Samsung is going to be... We're in negotiations now with Samsung to have it bundled with their... I forget the number. The S. Galaxy S.
Oh, their tab.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's going to be part of a bundle that
that's very cool.
With the Galaxy S.
So that's the big score. You get somebody big like Samsung, they could sell millions and millions of units.
We're hoping that the people that are exposed to it through Samsung will start to use it, and that will create more of a consumer demand on the other end, so that these two units can be sold to anybody who has an existing line.
Right. Very clever. Jay, I wish you the best. It's great to see you again.
Well, thank you so much. I wanted to tell you, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity. I've been a listener and a viewer of yours since you were way back on CNET. And so it's more of an honor for me to be here.
Thank you, Jay.
Okay.
Really
thank
appreciate
you.
It. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
That's, you know, kind of an insight into the process that's involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot going on at CES. It's dealers and manufacturers, but it's also people who are trying to get somebody to distribute. Yeah, Jay?
Can I give the email address?
Sure. Anybody's listening wants to, yep.
Yeah. You can contact us at voicekeeper@1ids.com. That's voicekeeper, all one word, and the number one and the letters IDS.com.
Thank you, Jay.
Okay, thank you.
Next, we got something very cool. If you have an iPad and you like to play games... Here's the arc. It's an arcade device. It turns your iPad. You slot the iPad into the arcade device, and you can play games with it.
Oh, that's so cool.
Let's get him up on the stage here. Meanwhile, while
Look
he's
that.
Setting
oh
up,
my God.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about the best little antivirus in the world, Nod32. I know you all know about Nod32 for Windows. In fact, the motto I always use is, if you have Windows, you need Nod32. Lightweight, effective security for Windows. Well, now they've got it for the Macintosh. The folks who do Nod32 ESET have just introduced cybersecurity for the Mac. And I tell you, they're selling it at the Apple stores, at the Micro Centers, at Fry's. But you can also try it absolutely free if you go to eset.com/Mac. Now, you've heard me say you don't need an antivirus for the Mac. Still, technically, I don't know of any viruses in the wild, but I see them coming. There are major security exploits out there. And here's a form of attack that everybody should be aware of. It's called spear phishing. If a bad guy is after your business and they know that you use Macs, they can send emails to your employees targeting you. So even if there aren't generally available antiviruses viruses out there, in your business, you may well be the target of an attack and not even know it. That's why cybersecurity for the Mac is very, very important. They also realize that education is the best defense against getting infected. So they've got a great education module in there as well to tell you what to do and not to. If you want to find out more, go to ESET.com/Mac and find out about cybersecurity for the Mac. Lightweight, its advanced heuristics engine catches viruses before they're even known in the outside world, and it's very, very effective. Cybersecurity for the Mac, ESET.com/Mac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy here, and Fred, is it Galpern? Is that how you say it, Fred?
Yeah, that's right.
He's here. He is from Ion Audio, and they've introduced the iCade. This is the coolest looking thing. Can you describe this for me, Fred?
Yeah, sure. The iCade is an iPad arcade gaming cabinet.
It looks just like a shrunken down version of something you would see at a Chuck E. Cheese or your local pizza parlor.
Sure.
It's like a Pac-Man machine. It's got a joystick, two red buttons, four black buttons, two white buttons. So that pretty much any game. Could you play Angry Birds on it?
I hope so. You know, not right now. We're showing Asteroids.
This is like, I mean, talk about going back in time.
Oh, yeah, I'm the kid that rode his bike 3 miles with a pocket full of quarters to play games.
Me too.
Now
me
I can
too.
Do it on my desk.
That is fantastic. So I didn't even know they had Asteroids for the iPad.
Well, they don't yet. You know, we have a great relationship with Atari. I'll show you really quick how it works.
So this is... there's the iPad. You see it just slotted right in there. It's a dock. So you do have to have a 30-pin connector in there.
Actually, you don't. It works over Bluetooth.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
So it's not even connected. It's just Bluetooth.
That's right.
You pair the iCade with the iPad.
Correct.
And now all the motions that you make just... like a keyboard, it's just a Bluetooth.
That's right, I can try to demo here.
No, you can't play Asteroids upside down and backwards.
Yeah.
No one.
I'm not that good.
Let's see how many quarters you wasted.
Yeah.
So Atari's developed something for this?
So we have a relationship with Atari where they've created Asteroids that functions with iCade. They're also going to be bringing many games from their library to iCade. You get the games through the App Store like any other game.
So a game has to be iCade aware to be usable?
It's even simpler than that. It just needs to use Apple's Bluetooth keyboard protocol.
Okay.
And it can connect.
So if it supports... look, I can see myself in it. If it, if it supports a Bluetooth keyboard for gaming, then it would work.
Actually, any Bluetooth keyboard for typing, we have a key map that tells these
I guess
buttons.
You could use touch. I mean, it's sitting in there. You could touch it, but
you could.
Really want to use the joystick and
it's
the buttons.
It's so much fun.
That is really great. It turns your iPad into a little arcade. How much is this going to be?
It's going to be $99.
Oh, very affordable.
God, that's great.
It looks like it's wood, right?
I mean, it is. Yeah,
it's very
wood.
Solid. $99, and is it available yet?
It'll be available late spring.
Late spring, and do you have distribution for it yet?
We do. We have a great team of salespeople, and Ion Audio does all kinds of innovative products, USB turntables, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, I have your turntable.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, it's that Ion. Okay. Yeah, I have a Ion USB turntable. They're
so
great.
So we're
in
all big box retailers.
Yeah, everywhere, yeah. Oh, absolutely fantastic. The iCade. Look for it later this year. For $99, that's a great price. Thanks. iPad not included. I should probably say
correct.
That.
Correct.
iPad not included. Is Atari charging for the games? I guess they are, probably.
That's up to them. Any game developer that puts out a game, they set the price.
Do you have an SDK for game developers? They can get in touch with you?
And they can just send an email to fgalpern@newmark.com, and I'll get that email, and
excellent.
I'll respond.
Very cool. Thanks for stopping by.
Okay.
I appreciate it, Fred.
Thanks for having us.
That is one of the coolest things I've seen.
Me too.
Isn't that fun?
Absolutely.
And it's so
great.
Simple, really. I mean, it's not a complicated idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just looks so cute. I want to get that on Regis and Kelly if I can. So we're going to get your card and we'll pitch them on that one. I have a secret mission here at CES as I wander around. I look for weird... You know, Regis is not a geek per se.
Yeah.
But he's so much fun. If you put something strange on his head or give him something weird to do, he'll dig it.
Yeah.
And Kelly is a fashionista. She loves some of these good-looking, cool gadgets. And, of course, she's got little kids. So I'm looking for things that they might like. And I'm going to be on the show January 18th on Tuesday. And
cool.
I'll bring a bunch of stuff from CES. You know what I'm going to do, too? They like TVs. Kelly's husband, Mark, really into this stuff.
Oh, yeah?
And I think he'd be very interested in some of these 3D TVs. I might bring some. I'll get your recommendations.
Please, let me know.
What to bring along.
Be happy to help you any way I can.
You know what's funny about that iCade? The chat room just told me this, and I didn't realize it. I wish Fred had said it. This was an April Fool's joke on Think Geek last year. And they actually made it. Scott Wilkinson, thanks so much.
My
Have a
pleasure.
Great trip home.
Thank you.
UltimateAVMag.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, live from CES. You got through the whole San Francisco show. That's great. I can't show Luis. I don't. It's not like they said, why doesn't he want to show Luis? Nobody wants to. Everybody wants to see Luis. Why doesn't Leo want to show Luis? Well, I'll tell you why. He's got two heads. It's disgusting. That's why. He's so ugly. There he is. Nobody wants to see that.
This is Premier Channel 7.
I'll tell you why the conspiracy. Look how good looking he is. Do you think I want anybody to see that next to my ugly mug? Get out of here. You're fired. Luis is greatest. And it's nice to have him. I never have him around. He's always the distant voice in Sherman Oaks. He's been with us all week, which is great. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate it. And thanks to Burke for sharing his room. Does Burke snore?
He sleeps like
a log. Yeah, you know why? Guy's working his ass off.
Channel 7.
That's great. I hope you guys, I hope you're having fun.
We'll begin.
Good.
Six
good. Thank you for coming out here. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right, automatic, off-site, and very affordable. Check it out for free at Carbonite.com/Leo. Or maybe it's offer code Leo. It's offer code Leo. I'm sitting here. I'm at the Consumer Electronics Show. I don't have any copy in front of me. I'm just doing it all from memory. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, in Las Vegas for the whole weekend this weekend, talking about the latest, coolest stuff at the Consumer Electronics Show. And I have to say, here we are in Las Vegas. CES, which is normally really very heavily about televisions and that kind of stuff, has really been this year about tablets and about phones. And I think that that really just shows you that mobility is key. Joining me right now from Sony Ericsson, Steven Sneeden. He is out of Atlanta, Georgia. Sony Ericsson announced two new phones at CES, and they're both the latest, greatest version of Android. They're Gingerbread.
Right.
And they're both beautiful. I want you show me these. Now, we should say that you don't have a carrier yet for these. You haven't made a deal
with it. Right. There hasn't been any specific announcement about carriers or first markets and specific pricing.
But Sony Ericsson phones are carried by all the major companies. Yeah, I mean, this is a good brand.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
I think so.
Ericsson invented cell phones, for crying out loud. Bluetooth came from Ericsson.
That's right.
I think you might have heard of Sony once or twice around here. So let me see what you brought
us.
Well,
actually, it's the same phone in two different colors. It's called the Xperia Arc. And first, let me show you the thinness of it. That's 8.7 millimeters thin.
It's very nice, very thin.
It's
a
beautiful arching design there. So that's the first thing everybody's been noticing is just how gorgeous it is.
It's interesting how phones have really gone from being pretty ugly candy bar devices with buttons on the front to slick, sleek objects of desire.
Well, you think about it, too. Everybody's dominated by the huge touchscreen now.
Right.
So what are you going to do with the rest of it?
And it's got to look good.
Sure.
Now, this is a 4-inch screen, it looks like it.
4.2. Actually.
Oh, it's even a little bit. Well, that's kind of nice. It's not quite as big as, say, the Droid X or the Evo, but it's a little bit bigger than the Nexus S. 4.2, I like it.
And feels great in hand.
Can I hold one to get a sense of it?
That's the Midnight Blue.
Oh, you know what? It is thin.
Yeah.
It's okay, now I'm comparing it to the only other phone right now that has Gingerbread, which is the Samsung Nexus S phone that Google sold.
Sure.
Heavier. Mm-hmm. You're lighter. You're thinner.
We're at 117 grams.
This really feels light. And unlike some phones that are light, this doesn't feel cheesy. It has a nice metallic
feels strong, doesn't
finish. It feels really nice. Mm-hmm. All right. You've got three physical buttons on the front, the back button, the home button, and the menu button. Missing is a search button. Why no search button on that?
Well, you have the search function.
It's built in, so you don't need
it. Sure.
Okay, great. And have you customize Gingerbread much?
To a degree. Mm-hmm. If you go, you'll see the five home screens there, and you'll see that one of the screens is devoted to media.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so you've got your photos, videos,
beautiful
and music.
Media player.
Yeah, it's all on one screen.
Of course, it figures that Sony Ericsson would pay a lot of attention to media.
Well,
a great gallery.
That's where the space we're playing in. We think of ourselves as trying to. The drive that we have is joining communication and entertainment together.
Right.
And obviously, a lot of that comes from Sony and the legacy that we have there. And speaking of Sony, there's a couple of really important assets in there. With the screen, we call it the reality display.
It's a beautiful display.
And it's powered by...
It's very bright. I don't know. You probably... For people who are watching our live stream, we do have a live video stream. Maybe you can see. I know the radio audience isn't seeing it, but I'm seeing this is really bright and crisp.
Well, it's powered by what's called the mobile Bravia engine. Everybody recognizes
the Bravia.
Bravia
TV,
so it's the same image engine technology you're getting from the Bravia TVs. So that's going to give you more vivid colors. Just true color, so therefore the name reality, but also sharper images and less noise there, so greater noise reduction because of all that.
Now, this is an LCD display? It's not an OLED.
It's an LED backlit LCD.
LED backlit, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we'll
like the TVs.
And we'll put it right head-to-head with the AMOLED screens.
You know what? I think it might even be a little crisper. It feels a little... the definition on it's very good,
and when you take it outdoors, it's gonna be
you can
superior.
See it, which you cannot do.
It's a low reflection screen. There's a complete.
Oh, it is. Look at that. I'm trying to see myself in it.
There's a complete airtight seal around it so that it keeps the light from hitting, get that reflection in there, so you get a lot less glare.
Processor in here is a Snapdragon?
Yeah, the 8255.
So the latest Snapdragon.
Yeah, the second generation. Yeah. So it's performing faster, giving you... it's at the 1 gigahertz clock speed, as the previous chipset, but it's giving you a lot more efficiency for battery, and it's just really nimble. That combined with Gingerbread, which I'm sure
the latest version of Android
is really fast.
Much faster,
So a lot of that is giving you a lot of good battery time, with the screen performing well. The screen is more battery efficient than the AMOLEDs as well.
Well, I noticed, and that's a good point. I noticed that one of the nice things about Android will tell you what's draining the power, and it's almost always the screen is
that's,
about
that's
half
the
power.
Usually the top thing there is the screen. So, so that's an important factor.
You got to cut the power use.
The screens conserve battery as well, and
now,
this does.
You said there are two colors. This is the kind of cobalt.
Midnight blue. So it's almost black, but you see a gradient there.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
Very, very nice. And then we have the misty silver.
Misty silver. Which looks like, that's beautiful. That's like James Bond might carry this. What kind of camera is in here?
You have 8.1 megapixel camera, and you have 720p HD video capture.
Sony's always paid a lot of attention to that.
And here's something else we get from Sony. Inside there, you've got the image sensor is what's called Exmor R for mobile. Mm-hmm. And the Exmor R is what you find in CyberShots and the Handycams. So you're benefiting again from a great Sony technology being in this device. The biggest benefit of that, it shoots brilliant images, but when you're shooting in low light, you're going to get twice the sensitivity, but without the accompanying digital noise you would expect.
That's nice.
There.
You do have a flash on here, but most camera phones just don't do well in dark.
Yeah, it's an LED camera flash, but I would rely more upon the Exmor sensor.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be a lot less grainy than you'd see in other cameras. Plus, the aperture is at 2.4. A lot of camera phones are smaller apertures, so it just makes sense. A wider aperture giving more light. And so I guess while all the others are going at 10, ours go up to 11.
It goes to 11.
Ours go up to 11.
So no carrier announcements yet?
No specific carriers just yet.
I would guess, either.
We expect it to be in a premium tier because of its design, because of the Sony assets, the HDMI connectivity, things like that. So it's supposed to be in an upper tier, but no specific price and no specific announcements about it.
Looks like, what's the charger on it? Is it mini?
You have micro USB.
Micro USB.
Yeah, that's on the side.
Yep.
And on the top you have the
HDMI.
The HDMI connection.
I like that.
Great HDMI story with this, too. You plug it in. If the TV's off, it's going to turn the TV on. Recognize the device. Going to take you straight.
If you have a Sony TV.
No, not necessarily.
Any TV, really?
Not necessarily. We prefer that you purchase a Sony Bravia TV.
Okay. But really, so it'll turn the TV
on?
It'll
turn the TV on, go straight to your photos and videos.
Wow.
And then you can take the remote control of the TV. You can sit the phone by the TV, go back and sit on the couch, and control the slideshow of the photos and your video playback with the remote control.
Is it DLNA or is it?
Yes, DLNA
as well. DLNA,
yeah.
Okay. Wow, this is a nice phone, the Xperia. I guess we'll just say it's coming soon to a carrier near you. Details to follow. It is a gorgeous phone.
That's been pretty much the universal response. We're really delighted with that.
Well, and I'm glad to see Sony Ericsson back in the game because, the more manufacturers there are, the more choice there is, the better for everybody. Thank you so much for coming by. I really appreciate it. Steven Sneeden with Sony Ericsson. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Leo.
You're listening to the Tech Guy Show, Leo Laporte. We're here in Las Vegas. We could bring in some more people, but it's the conveyor belt of gadgets right now. So we're going to slide Steven out and slide somebody else in. You're not going to leave those phones with me, are you, by any chance?
Okay. The phones don't stay in Vegas.
Everything else stays in Vegas without the phones. Thank you, Steven. I really appreciate it. We're not taking calls, as you might have noticed today, because I just want to get as much time as we can to see as many products as possible. But we'll go back to our regular format next week on the Tech Guy Show. And I just, a little personal plug, we've been here since Wednesday, covering the Consumer Electronics Show. We've done a lot of video. If you want more of this and you want to see some video, you want to see a lot more of what happened here at CES, we've got a whole bunch of shows we did, and they're available on my podcast network, twit.tv. Now, something cool has just arrived. It looks like special glasses. We'll talk about it in just a couple of minutes. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Stay here. Ooh, pretty.
Hi, Leo.
Hi.
Hannah.
From CES in Las Vegas, Nevada, Leo Laporte, the Tech. I feel like it's Monday Night Football or something. The Tech Guy. And just the last, 45 minutes of our visit to Las Vegas for the Consumer Electronics Show, we're going to wrap things up here in just a little bit. We're going to try to get as much of the flavor and the gadgets of the show on the air for you, though. And I do want to thank a couple of people before we get to our next product. Certainly Brent Bai, who came here all the way from Los Angeles through the desert and brought his lights, his cameras, and his action. And really been great to have you here, Brent. My chief of engineering, Ken Shepherdson. Luis Oliveira, who came from our studio in Sherman Oaks. It's great to have you. The TriCaster folks, NewTek, for our video switcher, the XD850. The LiveU folks for our backpacks that we're able to let our reporters roam the show floor wirelessly and broadcast live back. That was pretty cool. Bob Heil, as always, for Heil Sound Mics. That's the only mic I use, and we've got a lot of Heil Sound Mics here. They're specially designed to not pick up the bass rumbling you might hear right now. Everything's vibrating on the stage. Hannah Sarban is here. She's vice president at Marchand. You may know Marchand. They make high-quality designer eyewear, and they've solved a problem that exists with all these 3D TVs and the 3D movies. We all look like 3D dorks with our glasses on. We've come a little way since the red and green glasses anyway, but it's still kind of silly.
No, but not anymore.
Not anymore.
What we have is phenomenal fashion eyewear glasses for you with a patented circular polarized lens.
So you've got the lenses that will work with most real D projectors in your theaters. Most theaters use that.
Exactly.
And they will also work if you have one of the newer TVs that are passive displays.
Newer
a lot of
TVs.
These TVs have shuttered glasses. That's not what these are.
No, that's not what these are.
Right.
These are lightweight, comfortable. They work with a polarized technology.
Can I see a pair?
Absolutely.
Just let's do a fashion show.
Let me try a pair on.
Oh, you look great. You look like Jackie O. That's great.
But not only do we have these, but we were talking about prescription lenses.
Well, this
before.
Is a part problem for me because I wear spectacles, so I have to put glasses on top of my glasses, which is not anymore. Look at clip-ons.
You can wear a clip. It's a universal clip.
So these are like the clip-on
just like for
sunglasses that you would put on.
That's right.
And these will turn your existing glasses into 3D glasses. So that's not so embarrassing.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And what else we can tell you about these? I mean, not only are they 3D, but you can wear them outdoors because they're 100% UV protected.
So they're true optical.
Your eyes will be protected from the sun.
Yeah, they're like sunglasses. They're not probably as dark as dark glasses would be.
No, those are more fashionable. But what we do have, we also have a patent pending for what's called photochromic lens technology. And these are sold in our optical channels of trade.
Will these also be 3D?
Yes, they're 3D.
Right.
And when you go outdoors, the photochromic changes to a dark sunglass in 30 seconds.
They're kind of like the transitions lenses that automatically get dark. That's what I have on my regular glasses. Hey, do I look like Clark Kent? These are good. You know, this is a big improvement over the silly 3D glasses that you wear in movie theaters or if you have a passive display at home. I think we're going to see passive displays all over the place. I think they're going to take over from the active glasses.
So this is our Marchand 3D collection.
Photochromic. Now, what kind of prices are we talking here?
$99
okay.
Retail to $125.
All right.
And they'll be in stores in February.
Very good. Look for Marchon, Marchand. And everybody sells Marchand. These are the best-known designer frames.
We have Nike, we have Fendi, Calvin Klein. We've been in business for 25 years. We know how to fit a frame. We know about fashion.
They look good. That's great. Thank you so much. Hannah Sarban.
You're welcome.
From Marchand.
Pleasure to be here.
You know, I knew you were here because you have the big signage over the door. And I said, Marchand is here. We're going to see these 3D glasses. Thank you for making us look a little bit less dorky. Not a whole lot. I mean, there's only a certain amount you can do with me, I tell you. We're at the Consumer Electronics Show. Thank you, Hannah.
You're welcome.
We'll take you off the stage, bring somebody
we'll
else
do
on.
That. Okay.
There's lots of great gadgets here, lots of great products. No time to see it all, and that's one of the big problems, I think, with the CES show in general is it's just so massive. You never have time to see it all. People ask what I thought was the best. I have to say, I was surprised. I always, when I'm surprised by something, it always stays in my mind. I did not expect much from BlackBerry and the Playbook. This has been a tablet they announced many months ago, and they really never let anybody hold it. And I always thought, I think they're trying to discourage people from buying iPads and saying just wait, because at some point we're going to have a BlackBerry device. But it was a really big question mark because nobody was able to play with it. Well, BlackBerry's here, and they have the playbook, and they let me play with it. And you know what? It's great. I'm very impressed. They say they will be shipping the playbook in the next month or so. And I think it really is a strong competitor for the iPad. And let's not forget the iPad 2 will be coming out also in the next month or so. So we will see what Apple has done. But almost all of the tablet competitors here do at least one thing that people wanted, which is put a camera on the back and a camera on the front of their tablets. The Playbook is 7 inches, not the 10 inches of the iPad. And I know Steve Jobs said he didn't think anybody would want a 7-inch tablet. I think when you play with these, you realize, no, there's definitely a market for it because it's just a little smaller, still big enough to be a real tablet, but small enough to slip into a jacket pocket or into a purse without weighing you down. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. I was very impressed. In fact, I would say the BlackBerry Playbook was, in fact, my favorite product of the Consumer Electronics Show. One of the big stories of the Consumer Electronics Show wasn't even at the Consumer Electronics Show. Verizon, which it was here, and in fact had a keynote address Friday morning. And I ran over there to see Ivan Seidenberg, the CEO of Verizon, hoping they would make a big announcement. They announced, they made some announcements. They said, yeah, we're going to do a deal with Skype on Verizon phones. We're going to make sure that our 4G super high-speed network is available in 245 cities by the end of the year. That's a big story. There's a lot of competition. T-Mobile also announcing it's going to up its speeds in many cities. AT&T. Well, AT&T is AT&T. But not a word from Verizon about what, well, frankly, what everybody was hoping they would announce at CES, an iPhone on the Verizon carrier. Nothing. Not even a one more thing. Not even a hint. My friend Becky Worley, who reports for ABC News, sat next to Ivan Seidenberg and his wife at an awards banquet just the other day. And she says, I asked Mrs. Seidenberg, so when is the iPhone coming to Verizon? She said, I don't know. She said she asked her every course until finally the woman starts saying, guards, guards. So we didn't hear anything here at CES about the iPhone. The Apple's not even at CES. And then Friday afternoon, after that keynote, Apple Press started to receive email invitations from Verizon to an event on Tuesday. Another event, another keynote, another speech in New York City, Tuesday. And they didn't say what it's about, but let me tell you, the people who were invited were not typical Verizon press. They were the people who cover Apple. People like my friend Annie Anatko of the Chicago Sun-Times. And the people who weren't invited maybe are even more telling. Gizmodo, which hasn't been invited to a single Apple press event since the stolen iPhone incident of last year, did not get an invitation. I, who haven't been invited to an Apple event in quite some time, did not get an invitation. I get Verizon invitations, but I didn't get this one. So I have a feeling it's an Apple iPhone coming Tuesday. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy at CES in Las Vegas, the big consumer electronics show. We're talking about all the cool gadgets and gizmos and all sorts of stuff. We won't be taking calls for the rest of the show, but we will be taking calls next week. So my apologies if you have a burning computer or technology question. Just save it for next week, and we will take those calls. I was mentioning the Verizon iPhone again. I and pretty much everyone agrees, including the Wall Street Journal, that Tuesday Verizon will announce an iPhone on its network, something that's been hotly awaited. If they had announced it here at the Consumer Electronics Show, it would have been the single biggest story of the Consumer Electronics Show. Maybe that's why they didn't. But there are questions about this. It probably will not be an iPhone 5. It will probably be a modified iPhone 4. My suspicion is they will add capability to be on the Verizon network, but will not add the newest Verizon high-speed data network, the LTE network. This is all speculation on my part. I think Apple will keep that for the iPhone 5, which it will announce later this spring. Will Steve Jobs be at the event? Well, who knows? Wall Street Journal says they think he will be. I don't think he will be. I think maybe he'll be there by video. I don't think Apple wants to give too much weight to this announcement. Remember, they're still partners with AT&T as well. They don't want to admit that AT&T was a bad partner. What they'd like to say is AT&T is a great partner, and so will Verizon be. And leave it at that. As for availability, well, no one knows, but the Wall Street Journal says sources confirm by the end of the month. So soon. I have another source that says February 3rd. But it will certainly be with, almost certainly will be within a few weeks of the announcement. So, good news for anybody who wanted an iPhone but wasn't willing to, you know, suffer through the pain that is AT&T in some areas, not every area. I hear from iPhone 4 users in AT&T areas all over the country who say, oh, it's great here. It's just some areas, particularly areas where there are a lot of iPhone 4s, it doesn't work very well. It's funny, here at CES, where a very high percentage of the attendees are using iPhones, AT&T doesn't work at all. You can make a call, but you couldn't get data to save your life until everybody went to bed after midnight. All right, we're going to see some more stuff, cool stuff. What's your name, sir?
My name is Wayne Rassinen.
Hi, Wayne, and this is something you invented.
Yes, sir.
Are you getting distributors? Are you looking for distribution?
We're just put it on Kickstarter a couple of days before
CES. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so we're
what's
trying
the Kickstarter address?
It's, if you go to my
search
website,
for what?
Search for TechSkin, TechSkin.
And what's your website?
Intended, INTended. com.
That's neat. This is something you just invented.
Yes, sir.
And have you a manufacturer yet, or it's just you're looking for a chance to manufacture?
Well, we had these prototypes built from a manufacturer.
This is cool.
In Taiwan.
You showed me this earlier yesterday.
Yes.
It is an Xbox 360 controller that's modified with some special contacts on the buttons and on the underside to be a full keyboard. You can type with this.
The entire keyboard. Every letter, function, number, symbol of the entire keyboard, including the F keys. Now, it's hold one button and press another. That gives you 100 combinations. Now, the F keys, I had to go three buttons, but F1 through 12, they're all indicated.
It's fun. You demonstrated that you could type, and you were typing along. But I have to ask you one question, Wayne. Why would anybody want to do this?
Well, there are a couple of good reasons.
I'm going to let you hold it and type.
Sure.
Type
sure.
for us.
Well, they've released Facebook and Twitter on Microsoft Live.
And it's so painful to use an Xbox and type on that on-screen keyboard with a controller. That's a good reason.
And the idea is really to try to move text-based games like World of Warcraft and stuff that you can't play on the consoles.
So it modifies your controller, but you can still use it as a regular controller.
It doesn't change anything on the controller. It wraps around your controller. It plugs in USB. So actually, you can have it plugged into your PC and be playing on your Xbox and still I am your friend.
You know, I think you have a product there.
Thank you.
Are you getting attention from people as you wander the halls?
A lot of people give me a very good reaction from it.
That's good. But you still, and a Kickstarter project's one way to do this. You go to Kickstarter.com, you say, if people don't, you know, pledge to give a certain amount of money, I will manufacture this if I reach a certain threshold.
Right.
And then, but you're then obligated to give them that money, and you get, I presume you would get one if you pay enough.
For $100 at this point, for the skin. For $50, they can get a do-it-yourself kit.
Oh, that's neat.
Which is just the board and 10 keys, so you could actually build your own keyboard into the arms of a chair or into a pair of gloves if you want.
Give me the web address again so people can...
It's in10did.com. Intended. It's the input nomenclature 10-digit interface device.
I like it. And I've seen you type with it. It does work, ladies
yes.
and gentlemen. Good luck, Wayne. I hope you find a market for this.
And my brother, a big IBMer in... North Carolina wanted me to say hello for you, Harry.
Hey, Harry. Thank you. Thank you for coming by. I really appreciate
Thank you, Leo.
We're going to bring Motorola in here now. Motorola won best of show from the CNET folks. The Zoom tablet, X00M tablet, the first tablet to use Android Honeycomb. They also announced a very interesting phone, which won best of show for a mobile device, the Atrix phone. What's your name?
My name's Paul Nicholson. I'm the product marketing director at Motorola.
Paul, I'm so thrilled to meet you because I can't wait to see this. Now, I have to say, you won best of show for Zoom, but I haven't seen anything but a video of Gingerbread running on it.
Correct, yes. The software isn't quite finished yet, so we're showing some videos that give a kind of sneak peek.
Well, at least show the people watching on video at home. If you just tilt it up and get it, we'll get it on that camera, that video. You can go to YouTube and see the Gingerbread video that's essentially the same video, the same UI that you're going to have on the Zoom.
Correct, yes.
Zoom is a 7-inch tablet.
It's a 10-inch
tablet. Oh, it's 10-inch. Okay. And so it's the same size as the iPad, but it's 16 by 9.
It's 16 by 9. So we've optimized the screen for movie playback, so you can see the whole movie without all of that big black letterboxing around it.
Right.
And it's in HD, so I'm watching it in HD. It's like ripping.
What's the native resolution of the screen?
It's 1280 by 800.
Wow.
So it's over a million pixels.
Wow.
It's like ripping your plasma screen off the wall and putting it in the palm of your hand, which is really cool.
Now it has a fewer buttons on it. In fact, as far as I can tell, it doesn't have any buttons.
It has no Android hard keys. It's all touch-based.
It's all soft keys.
It's all soft keys. But
now, there's the monitor there, so you can see to the tilted just a little forward. There you go. It does look beautiful. I mean, that is really a good looking. Now, I noticed, Paul, that you actually were using Honeycomb. You actually were using the controls there.
Only a few people are allowed to actually use it. But you don't have to wait too long, because we've announced this for this quarter. So within the next 90 days, you'll be able to go to Verizon and buy the Motorola.
Verizon's your launch partner.
Correct.
You will, I presume, have a contract with Verizon for 3G.
All of the details on pricing and contracts and stuff will be
announced at that time.
Next few days.
Is it LTE or is it just 3G?
So what's really cool about this tablet, we've built it to be future-proof. So it's 3G with Wi-Fi, but it will be upgradable to 4G LTE, 8 times faster than 3G.
How will it be upgraded? Will I have to bring it back? Will I trade it in? Will I mail it in?
So it's a hardware and software upgrade. The details of precisely how you will upgrade it are still being worked out with Verizon. So, again, more news to follow.
Can you tell us some of the specs? What's the processor in there?
So the processor, again, we've built this to be the definitive tablet. So we've put a dual-core processor in here with 1 gigabyte of RAM. So those terminologies you've kind of heard from the PC world, most people are calling this PC tablet. So
it really is. I mean, that's 2 gigahertz processor. Is it the Tegra 2 in there?
That's 2x 1 gigahertz processing speed. Wow. So plenty of processing speed.
Is it the Tegra 2?
We don't announce what the
chip
is.
We won't know what that is.
But this graphics here that's being rendered on this HD display is being rendered by that processor.
Right. And a gig of RAM. That's unusual.
I've played this movie back on my HP laptop. It doesn't play as good as this.
How much storage is on there?
So there's 32 gig of memory on board, and we're working through details of the other micro SD.
There may be an SD slot. Or
still working on something.
Don't know yet. Okay. And what kind of screen is that? It's an LCD screen, obviously.
This is a TFT HD display.
It's very crisp.
Very crisp.
It really looks nice.
Very crisp.
So that's the Zoom XOOM. It was hotly awaited. You guys released a very challenging tease video, which kind of dissed the previous tablets, including Moses's tablets.
Millions of tablets.
But in a minute, we're going to see something even more intriguing, which is a phone that turns into a computer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a good tease. Great to see that. So people really aren't getting a chance to play with it. You're not letting people play with the Honeycomb.
No, the software's not finished.
It's just not done, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We saved the best for last. We're here at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show 2011. Paul is here from Motorola. Motorola won Best of Show outright for the Motorola Zoom tablet, the XOOM tablet, which we just talked about. That's the first tablet to run the new Honeycomb operating system from Google. This is what Google says is their tablet UI, and operating system, very different UI than previous versions of Android. Certainly a strong competitor to the iPad. But I think that in some ways, the Atrix phone is even more revolutionary.
This is the world's most powerful smartphone.
It really is so powerful, you can turn it into a computer.
You can turn it into a computer.
It's a transformer phone.
It's got a gig of RAM and a dual-core processor in this small device.
It's running Android 2.3?
Android 2.2. It'll be upgraded to 2.3 at a later point. But the big hit here is that it runs our new webtop application.
So I'm running Android when I'm using it as a phone.
Yep.
And then I have this docking station, which basically looks like a laptop without a brain.
We've got a couple of docks. One, actually, you can replace your desktop PC. This one is a laptop dock.
Very lightweight, very slender, because there's nothing in it. There's no brains. You just dock the phone into it.
No hard drive, no fans. It's all driven by the phone. So if I dock my phone into my laptop dock and open it up, this is now...
And it turns into a Linux computer? It's not running Android. It will run Linux.
This is now powered by my phone. And you can see here a full Firefox browser.
How? What is the screen resolution on that?
I don't know the screen resolution. It's 11.6-inch display.
It's 11-inch display. Okay. So it's kind of a netbook-sized laptop. So but you could run a bigger display because you're running a desktop. You could run a desktop display.
I could run this from 4 inches to 70 inches.
Wow.
All powered by the phone.
Wow.
So how many of us have been sitting there with their smartphones and I wish I had a bigger keyboard,
right.
I wish I had a bigger screen. I just put this in here, lights up, and I've got this full keyboard.
This is clearly for the road warrior who doesn't want to carry a laptop and a smartphone. You carry this in your bag, the little docking station, and now in the hotel room you've got a full computer.
It's for anybody who wants to use a computer out and about or indeed at their desktop.
Tell me about the UI, the Linux that you're running here. Is it a standard distribution? Or are you using one of the nettop distributions? What are you?
Standard Linux.
It's just a basic Linux.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow, that's very cool. Have you announced prices?
We haven't announced pricing. It's coming to AT&T again this quarter, so within the next 90 days at AT&T. It's also going to come to Bell Canada and Orange in Europe, and we haven't announced dates for those and pricing to follow.
Okay, wow. Very interesting. If you want the fastest phone on the market, this Atrix phone is pretty impressive, and then turn it into a full laptop computer running Linux. That's amazing. AT&T, you'll probably have to have a contract with AT&T, but details will follow, obviously, on pricing. Thank you so much, Paul, for stopping by. That is a very, very interesting product. Congratulations, both of them. Best of show, CES. Well done. Motorola came to play this year and really impressed. I have a Droid X. I'm a Droid X fan. Big Motorola fan. Although I'll hide that Nexus S. That's the. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for coming by. I really appreciate it. We've got more from CES in just a moment. Before I go on, though, I sure would like to remind you to back up. It's a tradition on Sundays. We say to everybody, make sure you back up your data. Of course, I don't have to remind you if you're using Carbonite. Carbonite is automatic. You never have to remember to back up. You just install Carbonite on your computer, and it automatically encrypts and backs up your data to the internet where it's safe no matter what happens, even if the worst happens. Unlike other backups, Carbonite is always available to you. You go to any computer, log on to your Carbonite account, and there's your data. They even have a free iPhone and BlackBerry application. So no matter where you are, what you're doing, your data is always as safe as can be. And affordable, you bet. $55 a year is unlimited backup for all the data on your internal drive. 15 cents a day. But I'll tell you what, I got a better deal for you. Try it free. Go to Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. You can try it free for 15 days. If you decide you like it, sign up. Use the offer code Leo. You'll get 2 months free. You've got to back it up to get it back. Do not be one of those people who calls this show and says, I lost everything. Use Carbonite. Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo, please, just do me a favor. Use Carbonite. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last few minutes of our show from CES, a reminder that all of the coverage we've done, including this show and a lot more, I don't know how many hundreds of hours of video we're putting up. It couldn't be 100. Dozens of hours of video we're putting up, but it's all at twit.tv in our specials feed, our daily GizWiz show, our home theater geeks show, our TNT show. We're all here at CES, and we've been having a great, great time. But let's get a couple more gadgets in here. Hi, what's your name?
My name is Aaron Lemieux.
Hi, Aaron, and you're with?
Tremont Electric.
Tremont Electric. What do you do?
We are the...
Get that mic right in your face there. You got to speak right down the barrel for me so
right,
I can hear
understood.
You.
Understood. Thank you very much, Leo. Tremont Electric is the developer and the manufacturer of a kinetic energy device called the N-Power Peg.
This looks like the device... That the guy used in No Country for Old Men to put people out of their misery. This isn't for killing cattle, is it?
No.
What does this do?
This is a kinetic energy harvesting device.
Harvests kinetic energy.
That's correct. It actually harvests human kinetic energy.
So what, do I sit on it?
No. With the N-Power Peg, you actually put it inside of a backpack, a briefcase, or a purse as you walk
just
along.
Just the joggling?
Yeah, just the up and down walking.
So this is like those wristwatches that self-wind from just moving around. How much energy can I get out of that, though?
From a normal human walking with the N-Power Peg, we can make devices like iPod Nanos energy neutral.
So instead of solar energy, or maybe in addition to solar energy,
correct.
I use this and I can generate as much power as I'm using, so it basically is a net zero. Let me see it. So,
here you go.
It's got a little something inside that mm-hmm. shakes. It weighs a couple of pounds.
No, it's 11 ounces.
11 ounces. Boy, I'm bad today on guessing weight. You have to put this end up.
That's correct.
And then just have that in your backpack or your purse. Just add 11 ounces to it, and as you jiggle, it generates power. How do I get the power out of it?
We use the USB protocol, and we have a tip system that comes with it.
So there's a USB port on this. Yeah, oh, yeah, there it is. I just plug that in.
And a simple push button to be able to download the power. We're compatible with 3,000 handheld electronic devices.
You've got a dongle right here for the iPad and the iPhone. It was just the 30-pin plug right there. I plug that into here.
That's correct.
And it'll charge it up. And it has a battery in here to store the power as I accumulate it?
That's correct. We have a 1,000 milliamp hour battery on board.
That's awesome. You know, I sit on a ball. I could probably use this to generate quite a bit of power.
Yeah, there you go.
How much is it and where is it available?
It sells for $159.99, and it's on our website, which is npowerpeg.com.
The letter N, P-O-W-E-R-P-E-G.
That's correct.
.com. Aaron, thank you for coming by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Leo. Cool. I appreciate it.
Look, I'm generating power right now. All right, let's get one more person in here. I think we have time for one more person. We're kind of in a race to get all the gadgets at CES into 3 hours. Can he do it? All right, who's...
How
are you doing, Leo? This is called iRadar, Brian Hosler.
Yes.
Tell me, you're with the company what?
Cobra Electronics.
Cobra. I know Cobra. Wait a minute. This is cool. This is a radar detector for my iPhone. Tell me about this.
All right. Yeah, it's a radar laser detector that works with your iPhone. So it uses Bluetooth.
Okay.
And we...
So you're going to buy a dongle, basically, that looks like a mini version of the radar detector I have in my car. I put it in the windshield, and then via Bluetooth, it talks to my phone.
Yes. Yeah, so all your radar laser alerts are shown on your phone. You do all your settings through there. And then we use the GPS of the phone.
I'm a little worried because Burke McQuinn, who drove all our equipment down here, seems extremely interested in this product. Burke, don't be in too much of a hurry to get home, okay? He's going, ooh, let me see more of that. That's cool. So how much is the iRadar?
iRadar is $129. There's a free app that's available on the App Store for free.
Is it just iPhone or can I use it on Android too?
Android will be available in the spring.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And the really cool piece is in the spring we'll also be releasing an update to our app where now we can upload radar and laser data to our server, and then we send it down to all of the iRadar users.
So you'll automatically know what's ahead, not just from the radar, but you'll know when there's a camera intersection. You'll know where there's radar speed traps hiding.
Well, that piece of it's already in the app. So that if
it already knows that.
We already have that. So and Cobra goes out and verifies those locations. Yeah, the new piece is that you'll actually know if one of our users has gotten a laser alert ahead of you.
Ah.
So
that's really cool.
Real-time network of detectors.
It's like when the truck drivers get online and say, we got a smoky up ahead.
Yeah. High-tech CB. So,
yeah. Renegade Mike says, why, that looks legal in many states. Where can I get one?
Best Buy, Amazon.com, they're available.
That's great.
Yeah, it's available now.
Available now.
Yeah.
Radar laser, because they're using lasers in some cases, and camera detector. And because it's got all the smarts is in the phone, this is a much smaller device on your dashboard.
Yeah, we've taken a lot of the smarts out of the detector, so that's how we offer it for $129 price.
Very affordable.
Point.
That's a clever idea.
Yeah, let the phone do the work. You already paid for those. So
I also saw, and I know you're not here to talk about it, but I also saw Cobra had a very cute kind of keychain thing that you keep from losing stuff. I love that. Tell me about that if you know about it.
Yeah, I know about it. It's called Phone Halo. And so it's a keychain mounted Bluetooth device
pair it to your phone.
Yeah.
And if you could attach it to your keychain, but you could also attach it to other things, put it in your purse. And when you leave the area, the phone remembers where it was.
Exactly.
And so you could say, where did I leave my purse? You look on your phone and there's a Google map of your purse. Thank you, Brian. So thank you all for joining us. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next year from CES and next week from the studio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Bye-bye. That concludes our broadcast day from Las Vegas, Nevada. That's cool. I'm glad we could get you on.
Yeah, thanks, man.
The last one of the day.
I know. I was wandering around. I didn't know where you guys were.
You found us. I'm so glad you did.
I was walking out, giving up, and found you.
I'm so glad, Brian. Yeah, we should just say right inside the door. It's the easiest thing to find in the world. Well, I'm glad we could get you on. I'm going to pitch that to Regis and Kelly and the key finder to Regis and Kelly. So I cross your fingers. I don't know how they feel about radar detectors, but if they like them, you got it.
Yeah, we just picked up the MacLife product. Innovation's a word for the whole show. Good. Number one.
It's a really, for that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Congratulations. It's really great to see Cobra. That's really good. Thank you.
Cool. Well, thanks for everything.
Oh, thank you. Thank you all. Again, a big thank you to this talented staff, starting at Lisa Kensel, our CEO, Eileen Rivera, our producer, Burke McQuinn, our driver, and setter-upper, Brent Bayer, who has been operating cameras, who set up our lights. He's actually a contract employee, but I tell you what, if I could hire him, I would. He keeps refusing me. He's just the greatest. Thanks to Kay Shep, Ken Shepherdson, who was switching today and is also our chief of engineering and put this all together. Luis Oliveira from the radio show, who came out. And if it weren't for him, there would have been no radio show because the ISDN box was not working on Friday. And I freaked out and said, that's job one, get that thing working. And he did. Well done. I really am glad you were here, Luis. I don't think that we'd be on the air without... Okay, come on over here. The chat room wants to see you.
Let me call you back.
No, you know, you can stay on the phone. Just show your face.
All right, cool.
They see, the girls... Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Gina. Do they want me to do a promo?
It's fine.
All right. Thank you to our broadcast team, Sarah Lane, who is eating her lunch there in the corner, who did a great job with iPad today and stayed up late two nights in a row getting the iPad Today show out. Is it posted yet, Sarah? Is it up? Yep. It's in the process of it's uploading, so it should be available very, very soon. It's a great show if you haven't seen it. Well, of course you haven't. Nobody's seen it. We didn't stream that one live, but we had a blast in the iLounge. Tom Merritt, who did TNT all week and did a great job. And if you can, watch those TNTs from CES. They were really, really great. Becky Worley, who does work for ABC News, but we've been slowly stealing her away from them. And really, she was very helpful in getting us some really interesting gadgets and gear. Have I left anybody out? Brian Brushwood, who's already gone home, right? Yeah, he's heading back to East Austin. But Schwood is great. He'll be back next week on Twit Live because he's coming back to San Francisco to do Scam School. But we love Schwood, another person I'm trying very hard to get on the network in a more regular capacity. You know, actually, one of the things that's... Baratunde was at dinner last night, and I really have this fantasy of getting Baratunde and Schwood to host the morning show. Our ad agency... Podtrack came to me yesterday, said, I have three sponsors. Didn't you say if we had three sponsors for the show, you'd launch it? I said, all right. So I think our morning show probably launched sometime concurrently with the launch of the new studio. Should be in the early summer, late spring, early summer. And if I have my druthers, Schwood and Baratunde as the hosts, Baratunde will be in New York, Schwood will be in Austin, and we'll have a host in San Francisco or Bay Area, you know, at our Petaluma studios as well. So that'll be fantastic. Who? Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Chad. Chad Anthony, right? And Jeremy. Oh, God. I can't forget the people back in the studio. Jammer B, who stayed home. The Michael Collins of the Enterprise. Thank you, John Slanina, for your yeoman-like work. I know you were there at all hours of the day and night keeping this up and running in the cottage. It's really a skeleton crew back there. Chad Anthony, who is Brian Brushwood's assistant, OMG Chad, thank you. He was really instrumental. I think I got everybody. Seems like it was a bigger team than that, but I think that's everybody. And, of course, to our partners who helped us out, Bob Heil gave us a bunch of microphones for the show today. Brett Bayh, who provided our lighting rig, he just kind of lent it to us, which is very nice. And these lights are great. We're gonna buy... Kina Flows. These are amazing. We had some big-time lights. We didn't use it as much as I would like to, but Axis gave us a PTZ cam, a point-tilt zoom cam, pan-tilt zoom cam. And the reason we didn't use it is because our interface to it wasn't really that good, so we didn't want to show you a bad picture. It's capable of a really very, very high-quality picture, and I have a feeling we'll be using something like that PTZ there in our new studios. That's a very high-quality, high-def cam that can be controlled via web interface. So it was up above our booth on the show floor. Thanks also to NewTek, which lent us the brand-new XD850, the latest TriCaster, and it's the next TriCaster for Twit. It's going to be the core of our new studio when we build it in the next few months. It's a really nice piece of hardware. I don't know. We really only used about a tenth of its capabilities. We pretty much used it like the old TriCaster, but it can do a whole lot more. And once we get into the studio and get used to it, we'll probably be doing a lot of things with it. Jason Howell. How could I forget him? There's that tall guy over there. Jason Howell, who produces TNT, also edited and produced Twit this week. Really a great acquisition. He was part of the Buzz Out Loud team along with Tom Merritt, and we're whittling away at that team. One by one, we're adding them to our own team. Thanks also to Live U. Those Live U backpacks were great. We had three of them this week. I think we only used our SD backpack. We had two HD backpacks as well. Those are amazing. Those are the backpacks that let us stream wirelessly from the events. And I don't know if you saw the live coverage that we did from Showstoppers and then on around on the show floor. But, man, those things are amazing in a very challenging 3G environment. I can't use my iPhone or iPad for 3G. They just gave us a rock-solid picture everywhere we went. We didn't really put them to too much of a challenge, but we probably will in Austin. In a couple of months. We do have many more live broadcasts planned for the Twit Network. This is something we really want to keep doing. It's very costly, but thank goodness we're able to find sponsors like Ford. Ford really stepped up this week and really made it possible for us to do this. The folks at Squarespace also and Citrix, thanks to them, we are able to do these without losing too much money. And we will go back out into the field. Next time is Mac World Expo, which is just a week or two from now. We're going to do Mac Break and iPad Today from Mac World Expo. That's a Thursday. I guess it's a week from Thursday. And then I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks. I'm going on a geek cruise for 3 weeks to South America. So I will be out of the studio, and I don't think we have anything planned during that time. March, however, we will be back in Las Vegas. March is Austin, isn't it? South by Southwest in the second week of March we'll be here. And that's going to be a lot of fun. I don't know. That was where we really started using the live view in an interesting way. And wait till you see what we've got planned for South by Southwest. It's pretty amazing. Then it's back to Las Vegas in April for the National Association of Broadcasters Conference, NAB. I believe we're going to be the official podcaster of NAB. September's Dragon Con, and there's some other events in between then, now and then. But I think the other big story is, of course, we have signed the lease. We will by tomorrow have signed the lease for our new studios, and we'll start demolition over there this week, and we'll start building the studios in a couple of weeks, and hope to be in those new studios, knock on wood, sometime in April. And shortly after that, probably in May, we'll launch the new morning show with hosts to be announced later. But you know they're going to be good. They're going to be good. No, I don't think we'll be covering scale. Thank you. I would like to cover scale, actually. Maybe we could bring a pack down there. Say again? Thank earthquake sound for the ambiance. what else is going on? I think that's the whole thing. Yeah, we will have a number of cams watching the construction, and in fact, Brent's going to be posting some time lapses he did here. He had the slider, which is he's actually setting it up one more time. The original slider, which is a kind of an I-beam that you can with a motor on it, a motorized mount for a digital SLR. He's got his Canon attached to that, and it slides across. And there he is. He's setting it up right now, and it's going to slide across and do a motion capture. We did one of the setup, and I presume he's setting that up for the takedown. They'll be posting them all next week. We have one of Twit. I think the battery died, so the camera during Twit is going on and starts to slow down and it stops, and then he puts a new battery in and it starts. But there'll be some very interesting, unusual time lapses, very high quality, high def time lapses from CES, which should be a lot of fun for those of you who are extremely nerdy. I do hope you enjoy this coverage. Everybody works really hard to do it. We pretty much kill our staff to do it. They're dedicated. They work their butt off. They want to bring you the best possible coverage. Send them an email. Say thank you in the chat room whenever you see them. Don't say, boy, you look tired. Say, gosh, that was great. That was great coverage. If you like it. If you don't, let us know, too. You can email me, leo@twit.tv, and let us know what you could do better, what you'd like to see next time. If there was something that was just god-awful that you want to fix, we would absolutely love to get that feedback. Don't send it to them. Send it to me. Leo, I can take it. leo@twit.tv. Our idea is that if the networks won't bring you major coverage of geek fests like this, well, good, because we will. And we'll do it the best we can. And I think better each time. Multiple streams next year is a great idea. I think that's on the slate for us at some point is multiple streams. I guess that's it. I think we're going to turn off the cameras and start to shut it down. I'm just delaying the inevitable. I don't want to go home. Thank you, everybody, for letting us be a part of your life for the last few days. We'll be back next year at CES. I can promise you that. I've already thanked everybody here. Let me just thank you for being here, and we'll see you next time.